This is a special meeting to make appointments to our advisory boards. So we will start with that. First thing off, we need to have a discussion because we have a policy where we do not have employees on our advisory boards, and we have one on the Measure Q advisory board. So, Rob, did you want to address that issue?
There's actually two issues I'd like you to address and just maybe provide us guidance for. First has to do with the Morro Bay T-Bid, which has certain categories that they must qualify in. And I didn't bring the bylaws, but I'm sure Andrea can tell us exactly the ones that we have. And we're having trouble getting from certain categories. I think it's in the 22, or is it the larger hotel?
The two vacancies that we have currently are 22 rooms, 22 or less rooms, and 51 or more rooms. The two member-at-large positions are currently filled, and those applicants have not resigned.
And I believe the applicants tonight don't fit those categories, so one of the ways to correct that is, if you'd like, is we could go back and change the bylaws and do it instead of a shall be from those categories, be like we've done with Promotions Committee and with, I think it's Harbor also, where we've used language that the City Council shall make every effort to put them into those categories, but it isn't mandatory. But that's up to you guys to discuss. If they don't fit those categories right now and you don't want to amend them, then they have to just remain open.
Okay. Let's deal with that one first.
Okay.
Any discussion on that, or would we like to just have a motion that we add that wording?
I'm a little concerned about adding that wording because I think one of the issues in when people voted on this was that they wanted to make sure that the smaller places
right.
were represented, and if we do that, then that's not going to happen, or it's likely to not happen. My question is more about Ms. Solu. Since she does have a motel, can she not fill one of these positions and let one of these other people be at large?
But her hotel doesn't fit the
smaller category,
I believe. What's your room? 16. So it doesn't.
You have one applicant that meets your 22 or less rooms. Mm-hmm. You have another applicant that doesn't meet the only category that he would meet would be member at large.
Mm-hmm.
It's my understanding and discussions that I've had with Ms. Solu is that she currently is not interested in giving up her member at large position.
Yet she qualifies for the
I
other.
Know.
So what's up with that?
I'm not sure. Did she give a reason why she did? What difference?
She did, but I'm not comfortable. I'm not comfortable sharing that at this point.
Oh, okay. And so if the council decides that she does fit that category and we want her to represent that, can we just make that change?
I think we can.
You could. That may result in her no longer being on the board.
I'm perplexed. Okay.
I'm perplexed with you.
Well, I know when we allowed Ms. Solu to take the member at large was so Mr. Casola could take, because they both fit in the same category.
Mm-hmm.
So they were kind of jockeying those positions around and to serve the needs to fill the board. And I kind of feel like maybe, you know, we should have the same discretion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mind the wording so much as long as that small hotel has to be preserved as far as I'm concerned, because that's the one that needs to make sure it stays represented.
Mm-hmm.
So can we put the wording in?
You certainly
exempting
do.
Exempting the small hotel or something from shall or?
Well, they need to be treated equally, I think,
yeah.
The different categories. And as I recall, we did not come up with these categories, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was brought to us.
But we approved them.
Yeah, and so I'm not sure why we would not want to honor them.
Mayor, you have three categories that are similar. You have 51 or more rooms. You have two of those categories and one 50 or less. So potentially you could condition one of those three larger ones to be, every effort will be made to meet that category, and that would give you a little bit of wiggle room versus doing it with a small.
Well, I think the
one.
Concern, though, was that the smaller ones have a voice specifically. That their interests might not be the same as the large ones.
But I think that's what she's saying.
You would continue to have that because you would leave your 22 or less rooms alone. Maybe condition one. I don't know how the city attorney feels about that.
We can condition any language, or you could move your current board member that certainly fills the 51 or more and fill that one and put her in that slot.
But then we're making a law based on a person rather than on the law. And it seems like if this was the best delineation that was brought to us, we want to honor the law.
Right, right.
So I'm not sure why we would change it for one person.
But well, I think Mr. Schultz is suggesting is that we move Ms. Solu's position to fit the member from the member at large to back into the 51 rooms or more.
Okay.
That would open up the member at large.
Is that what you were saying?
Yes. And then if a problem occurs with Ms. Solu, then you'll have that problem and other ones. And change the bylaws to hopefully get more applications.
Well, my preference would be that we move John Zola to one of the hotel positions, and then we have two people applying that may be appropriate.
Mm-hmm. And so maybe it could be an at-large hotelier, one that fits each category, and then one at-large hotelier.
That works. Okay.
Something weird like that?
Yeah, mm-hmm. All right. All right, do you need a motion on that then?
Would you like a change to come back with some?
Yeah, Betty, why don't you go ahead and make that motion?
Would you like the bylaws to come back with some alternative language? That would be the motion, just to direct us to, and then we'll come back with some ideas for you on how to. Maybe we'll even talk to the Morabay TBID to get some examples of what they might think would be a good way to get more people involved.
And can we still go ahead and appoint tonight then,
yes,
based on that?
You can do that tonight with the motion to move Joan Sulo into the 51 or more room.
Okay. All right, you want to make that motion?
That I move that staff come back with committee bylaws that represent the discussion to amend the language to and talk to TBID about how we want these categories to work. And obviously, after a year, they can see how things move around. And so I would think it's not.
I think we just lost the motion.
Sorry, I was talking to
it. Do you understand the motion?
Sorry, Jamie. I move that staff come back with amended language to the bylaws, to the TBID, examining categories, particularly hotelier categories, with the potential to be at large. Yeah. One to be at large.
Are we okay on that? Okay.
Sorry.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
I'm sorry. Yes, a second would be good. I'm trying to hurry. Seconded by Carla. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. All right. Now, the situation then is we do have two applicants who may or may not fit those categories. We do not have to appoint them both, but we can. And so what I would suggest, since we have two and two openings, we just ask each of them to give us a minute's comment about themselves, and then we make our decision without question, simply because we have so many other people to talk to.
And then do we also need a motion to move Ms. Solo into a different category?
I don't.
In order to appoint one of these people.
Okay, we can do that. Okay. Yes, we will do that. Okay, so with that, our two applicants. Jane, would you like to go first? Just give us a short reason why you're here and what you'd like to do. You have to pull the mic over to you.
Well, push the button.
And push the button. There you go.
Push.
There you go. Is that good?
Yeah.
My name is Jane Beeman. I am the owner and manager of the Bayfront Inn, which is a 16-unit motel hotel on the waterfront. I've been doing that on and off for the last 4 years. And I'm very concerned about marketing and very concerned about the small hotels, and I've increased income and brought in some very innovative marketing tools into our hotel, which has increased the income 30% so far this year. So that's all I need to say.
Okay. Thank you. And John?
My name is John Myers. I think pretty much everybody knows me fairly well. I've been a resident for about 8 years now here in Morro Bay, along with some colleagues. We've spent a fair amount of time, you know, trying to understand the city and the numbers and the finance and that kind of stuff. My background was primarily in international banking and finance, so I think I could probably add some talent to the pool here in terms of understanding numbers and financing that might associate with whatever we're doing. I was a member of the New Futures Committee a few years ago, and I think that's probably where I began to meet most of you at that time. Anyway, I think I could do some good in coming up with some ideas on how we might better improve the revenue in the city and using the bid money.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Any quick questions for them, anyone? All right, then you have your ballots in front of you. Please put the category and the name. Yes, Rick, go ahead.
There was something that wasn't filled out. On Jane, are you a registered voting resident? It's not filled out, yes or no, on your application.
Oh, yeah, you do.
In the bylaws, it says that?
Do we not? What's it say, Rob? Yeah, that's what I thought.
You have until 2 weeks before the election to register. Will you register?
Oh, yeah.
Did you get a ballot in the mail?
No.
Then you're not registered because they came out. Can we appoint on a promise? Okay. Please, when you do register. Sure, then you each have a microphone. That's good. Oh, no, you don't. I have to share that one in the back. Okay. All right, this is for the Measure Q Advisory Committee, and we'll start with Barbara. If you, again, each give us about a minute just on your background, why you want to apply for this.
Oops. Thank you. We were looking to downsize and found the area through our son that attends college up here. My background is I've been with my current employer, CSC, Computer Sciences Corporation, over 12 years, primarily handling contract negotiation, administration review, inventory, budgeting, and various other assignments. Prior to that, I was with Northrop Grumman Corporation in Los Angeles for 14 years as well, handling everything from contract negotiation, general management responsibilities, legal terms and conditions, et cetera. The reason I'm applying for this position is I've always been employed full-time and have limited time for volunteer activities. However, most of my work has been with PTA and auditing and school site council elected positions over the years. And now that my children are out of school, I would like to contribute to the community. And I noticed an opening for the Measure Q. I think with my background, formal education, accounting experience, and management, that perhaps I could be a good fit and help with the oversight. It appeared to be something that would interest me.
Okay, thank you. Michael?
Good evening. My name is Michael Durek. I won't repeat a lot of the things I said at the earlier interviews, I guess a month or so ago. I'm a labor arbitrator, former commissioner of the Federal Mediation and Conciliation Service. Operated my own business as a labor relations consultant in Southern California for 26 years. I have an extensive background in fringe benefit administration, trusteeship, and collective bargaining, and a keen interest in the city's finances, as I'm sure all of you know from various conversations we've had over the years.
All right. Thank you. And Mr. Chandler.
Good evening. My name is Mike Tandler. I've been a property owner here in Morro Bay for about 6 years, a resident for not quite two. Measure Q is the first tax increase I've ever voted for in my life. In fact, the only tax increase I've ever voted for in my life. I think if you look at the state as an example, you'll see why I'm a little reluctant to vote for tax increases. But you folks, I think, were in a perfect storm. I think nobody could have really foresaw not only our fishing industry go south, our power plant go south, and then have this huge economic downturn hit us all at once. I don't think anybody could have planned for that. So I thought Measure Q was worthy. I think it's very important that we keep Measure Q intact. I think it's possible we may have to go back to the well again. And if we don't do what we promised the people of Morro Bay we are going to do with Measure Q, it's going to be very difficult for us to go back to them and ask for more. My background, I'm a retired truck peddler as a heavy equipment salesman. I learned a little bit about equipment, and I learned a little bit about finance. But also as a salesman, you learn some skills that maybe not everybody has to learn as well as a peddler has to. You have to learn, number one, to listen. You have to learn, number two, to ask questions and when to ask questions. And you have to learn how to get the order, that is, gain consensus. And you have to know when and where to do that. So that's what I bring.
Okay. Thank you. And Mr. Pierce.
Good evening. My name's Bill Pierce. I'm a longtime resident of Morro Bay, in excess of 30 years, if I start counting on toes and fingers. And I've had three businesses in Morro Bay, and I have been at different times news director of two different television stations in the area, almost. And I was on the original Measure Q committee that took the data that was garnered by the city before we asked when we put it on the ballot, and then I was part of the committee that literally talked to the community along with the off-duty public safety people that went door to door, and I was one of those people that helped sell the idea of Measure Q to the public. And I feel that it's very important that we keep the promises we made to the public. We have to keep that faith, because the increasing pressure to use it for...
I see the Measure Q evolving as we go into the future, and looking at the potential of actually addressing some of the key projects that the community was really identifying as major needs initially, and now we see that the fire station is nearing completion. And yes, we'll always have important needs in that area, but as we go forward, how do you see us checking in with the community, identifying new needs, or is that important to you? And how do you see the management Measure Q evolving?
You got the question. Okay. Let's start with Barbara.
Okay, thank you.
I'm going to give each of you a minute to answer. I'm sorry, but that's really all the time we have. Okay?
Okay. The way I see it is communication to the public as to what's been accomplished to date in a clear and concise manner, particularly right after the meetings and the reviews, which I believe are held at least annually in December. I would look to try to establish that type of communication rapport. When I looked at the minutes, I didn't see anything obvious other than that the expenditures were reviewed. Now, maybe I didn't look in the right place, but that's personally what I think needs to happen, and to get that in front of the community, and then maybe reevaluate what the original sale to the public was and make sure you're still complying with that. If not, consider how it can be revised.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Jurek.
I believe the spirit and intent of Measure Q and of the voters was to prioritize Measure Q funds to be spent for public safety, streets, and storm drains. And I believe we should stay on that path.
Okay. Mr. Chandler.
I tend to agree with Mike on that, those very points. If we're going to go off of public safety and infrastructure, then maybe we ought to have an election to sunset Measure Q and bring up another measure. But this is what they voted on. This is what was on all the door hangers. This is what we told them we were giving them. Yeah, I agree with Mike. I have no interest in doing anything different with Measure Q.
Well, some of the projects or things that were listed in the survey that was done of the public, that was all done before we actually started the campaign. And at the time the Lou Group did that survey, there were not enough votes in their estimation to pass it without a campaign, which we then conducted. What we told the public was police, fire, streets, and storm drains. And those needs are not going to evolve. You're always going to need equipment. You've got 48 miles of streets. At one point, it was estimated $100 million or more in street repairs. I don't think you have to go looking for anything else. I think if you just try to keep your police and fire departments put together and maintain your streets and storm drains, you've got far more need than you have money. So I really don't think you need to evolve it into some other project.
Okay. I forgot we have an issue that we have to go back to, Rob, and that's about the rules of not having employees on our advisory boards. Could you just...
Yes, it's another one that you need to address. There's one position that's definitely open tonight, but the possibility of two that you'd vote on if, in fact, you don't agree to amend your bylaws. Your bylaws require or do not allow a city official or elected official or an employee to be on your advisory bodies. Unbeknownst to, we didn't realize it. Graham Pask, we didn't put the two together since he's a reserve, but he is actually an employee. So we either have to fill two, or we could change the bylaws to come up with language that reserve or part-time or some other language would exempt them from that. But he is an employee.
All right, so let's discuss that one first, because that's going to affect how we vote. Do you want to change that bylaw, or do you want to keep it the way it is, in which case Mr. Pask would have to be removed from the board? Betty, thoughts?
Well, I think there's enough residents to occupy these positions that I'd rather not, regardless of who it is, not change it where we would have employees on this all-resident committee.
Rick?
Well, knowing Mr. Pasca, he wouldn't take advantage of this, but someone else might, and so I think we need to adhere by the original rule.
Noah? Carla?
I'm in agreement. I think Mr. Pasca is of the utmost character, and it's not a question of him, but we'd have to oversight every advisory body. If we make an exception, we'd have to make an exception to all.
Well, and I think the reason that he kind of slipped in was because he was on the committee, he was working for the issue all along, and so it was like, yeah, okay. A lot of the people who were working for it were put on the advisory board. So I'm sorry we goofed, Graham, but I think we need to correct the goof now. So with that, do you need a motion?
I would make a motion that we will be having two appointments.
One
to replace Graham Pask.
And corrections, and this way you don't have, an 11-month lag between the time the city moves forward to do something and the input back from the Measure Q committee. So I would think twice a year is very appropriate.
Mike?
There could also be situations where maybe twice a year wouldn't be enough. You know, things do come up, and if it's a bubble, whether it's a Measure Q item or not that needs an immediate decision, it's possible we may have to do it more than twice a year.
Okay. Mr. Derrick?
Well, I'm prepared to put in the time necessary to perform the job if it's once a year, twice a year, or more.
All right. Barbara?
Thank you. Agree with all my colleagues. Twice a year would probably be most appropriate and help with the continuity, the budget, any adjustments, et cetera. So, and I'm also willing to do that. I do not have business travel or any other commitments at this time.
Okay. Everyone okay? Ready to vote? And we do have to vote. When you put your choices, put the term, too. One ends in 2013, one ends in 2014.
Council members, please don't forget to put your name on your ballots.
Yes. Everybody put your names on the ballot. She didn't put the time on. While the votes are being tallied, I would say that two of you will be appointed, two will not, and we do have an opening on the Recreation and Parks Department. So that advisory board is open, and if you're interested, please consider applying for that. Okay. Oh, you're too late now. If you just came in, we're doing appointments to our boards, and we'll be finished any moment and start our regular meeting.
Since we do have a second and a yes or no answer, if it's possible, would you see the Measure Q committee being a viable resource for the council or staff to utilize in other financial decisions that the community faces?
Yes or no answers?
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Taylor?
No.
Pierce?
No, I think I...
Just yes or no? Just yes or no? Bill, what's yours?
No. I think Measure Q is a separate entity, all to its own, shouldn't be intermingled with anything else.
Okay. Two yeses, two noes. Thank you. Then we got an election, Andrea, or an appointment?
Yes, I have Michael Dirk receiving 3 votes, Barbara Spagnolia receiving 3 votes, Bill Pierce receiving 2 votes, and Mike Tandler receiving 2 votes. And they went in this order. Betty Winholtz voted for Michael Dirk and Barbara Spagnolia. Rick Grantham voted for Bill Pierce and Mike Tandler. Janice Peters voted for Bill Pierce and Mike Tandler. Noah Smuckler voted for Michael Dirk and Barbara Spagnolia. And Carla Borchard voted for Michael Dirk and Barbara Spagnolia. Out of those with terms, I've got Michael Dirk ending in 2014 and Barbara Spagnolia ending in 2013.
All right. Thank you very much. Two of you are appointed.
Thank you all. Try to support you.
Thank you. All right. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll start our regular meeting. All right, we have everyone here. We will reconvene our meeting. This is the Monday, May 10th meeting of the City Council. All members of the Council are present, and we will begin this part of our meeting with a moment of silence, please. Thank you. To lead us in the pledge, we have Supervisor Gibson. How about you lead us in the pledge and then tell us about your issues there?
Mayor Peters, thank you. If you would all join me in the flag salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, an action plan. Part of our effort to reduce our greenhouse gas footprint as we seek to meet the targets of 2020 and 2050. Supervisor Hill will actually be leading a town hall meeting that starts at 6 p.m. in our board chambers for the public to come and offer its thoughts on a variety of topics. I'm not exactly certain of the particular presentation that might be made, but it's an opportunity for folks from all over the county to come to an evening meeting to give their input on this significant matter. The two main topics, and I would refer you for a little bit more information, our Director of Long-Range Planning, Chuck Stevenson, published a very informative viewpoint in Sunday's Tribune, and it talks about some of the issues at play there. How are we going to change the way the trend is going to try to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The other main topic of the evening on Thursday is going to be our land use and conservation element update, and that's the effort to do planning on the rural areas of the county outside of our unincorporated villages in town and obviously outside of your city limits. The key there is coordination between your city and the county, and we've already talked with staff and did appear before your joint meeting in the Planning Commission a while back to talk about that. So I think it'll be an informative evening, and encourage all members of the public to attend. The second topic is, I noticed in your minutes that you have proclaimed Bike Month, the month of May, and indeed up there comes forward, not this week, but next, Bike to Work Week. That'll be Wednesday the 19th, and as we have for the last couple years, we are going to be organizing a ride to work, leaving Morro Bay from the coffee shop by the roundabout at 7 in the morning. And Councilman Smuckler, I think, is going to be participating. I'll put him on notice that I have new equipment. I got every boy's dream. I got a new bike for Christmas. So I have a chance of at least seeing him in front of me when I get down to San Luis Obispo. I look forward to that. I didn't mean to steal your thunder if that was going to be something you were going to talk about on the dais. And finally, while I have the lectern, I do appreciate your city manager and your council bringing forward the resolution on whaling, or hopefully a resolution on the opposition to opening of whaling, which we hope to be successful. You know, our Board of Supervisors gets approached on resolutions and offering our opinion on a wide range of issues that are sometimes rather outside our purview. But, you know, when this one came forward, this one really struck me. It struck close to home. The gray whale, obviously our state marine mammal, and a very important part of our sense of identity, our sense of place here on the Central Coast, and particularly the North Coast. And so I very much appreciate Mayor Peter's interest in this, and wish you congratulations on bringing this important issue forward. And again, maybe I'll leave Mr. Smuckler the chance to talk about an event that's going to happen on May 23rd. He and I both will be speaking, along with a number of other folks down at the Rock, and I'll perhaps let him fill you in on the details. So with that, again, I thank you and appreciate
thank you. Good to see you. All right, and for our business tonight, we have Morro Bay Appliance, which is under new ownership by Sherry and Jim Menarek, and their manager, Bob Selko, is going to tell us about Morro Bay Appliance and the changes there.
Good evening, everybody. My name is Mike Menarek, and I am the new owner of Morro Bay Appliance. I recently purchased the business from my parents, who owned it for 19 years. I guess with Bob and myself, we're ready for another 19 years. So with the support of the community and, you know, just our beautiful town we live in, I'm ready to do business. Bob's my general manager of the store, so I'm going to let him take over for me.
Great. Good evening, Madam Mayor and council members. I want to start by saying thank you for your dedication to our town and level of service and commitment that you have. We hope to aspire to your level of service in the way we operate this store. Presently, we're open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 5:30, and Saturdays, plus or minus 10 o'clock to sometime in the early afternoon. It's always difficult to put a closing time on Saturday since we get so many stragglers at the last minute. We are a full sales and service operation. We have new and used appliances. Some of the brand names we carry are Amana, Hotpoint, GE, Whirlpool, Maytag, Tappan, Gen Air, Crosley, Hire, and many others. We have about 60 pieces of equipment, appliances on the floor right now. Our inventory will grow as we do. We can special order and have in-house, and the ones watching this recording, but everybody down the road. Our typical service call is $65 in Morro Bay and Cayucas and Los Osos, $75 in Cambria and San Simeon because of the extra distance to travel. Our service call is incredibly informative for the consumer. Many times people will call up and the information we get is my washer's not working. Now we've got to spend time on the phone trying to ferret out what went wrong and how to fix it. Oftentimes people don't know how to make decisions whether to fix something or to buy something new or used. So Mike is an expert at listening to that information and virtually immediately coming up with a diagnosis, just like I did when I was a chiropractor here in town. It's very helpful to consumers to know that this repair is going to cost $100 versus a new machine is going to be around $500 or $600. We pride ourselves in getting that information out to the customer as quickly as we can. Secondly, we offer people the opportunity to drop off their appliances at our store to save some of that cost of the service investigation. So in that regard, it would cost $40 to evaluate and diagnose the problem with their appliance. We also offer a rebate or a payback for anybody that decides at the last minute after a service call that the cost of repair is too much and they now want to purchase a new appliance. We will rebate half of that service call towards the cost of that new appliance. So once again, we have new and used appliance. We invite everybody in the local community to come in and shop and look around. And if you don't see what you want, let us know, and we'll go out and find it for you. Once again, thank you for everybody for your great attention, and we look forward to being of service to you in the future.
Thank you. Okay, and then we do have one proclamation, so I would ask the council to pull A3 off our consent agenda.
Move to pull A3.
Okay, do I hear a second? Second to Rick. And all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. Okay. So Herb White, if you'll join me up there. Let's get the official stuff first. Okay. All right. This is a proclamation declaring May 23rd to May 29th, 2010 as 2010 National Beach Safety Week. Whereas the beautiful coastal and inland beaches of Morro Bay represent a renowned recreation resource, and residents and visitors alike are drawn to these beaches each year, and for reasons of public safety, an annual reminder of the joys and hazards associated with the aquatic environment are appropriate at the commencement of the busy summer beach season. And we must remember to never swim alone, always swim near a lifeguard, never drink alcohol before swimming, respect the power of the surf, and learn to swim. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Morro Bay does hereby proclaim May 23rd to 29th, 2010, as 2010 National Beach Safety Week. There you go. Thank you. Okay. And you want a picture? Did you get it?
Honorable Mayor and Council members and the department heads, thank you for taking the time tonight to recognize the need to remind everybody about ocean safety. Basically, the Junior Lifeguard Program is designed to teach the children about ocean safety, but quite often they're messengers that go out in the community and relay that information to their parents and their peers and their teachers at school. The purpose of National Beach Safety Week is to remind people the week before Memorial Day kind of kicks things off, and it's time to start thinking about the summertime. And what we're going to do this year, this is our second year to kick off the activities here for the Morro Bay Junior Lifeguard Program. We have a barbecue coming up, and I'll leave some flyers over there for you guys. And basically, the barbecue includes a tri-tip barbecue, which is a fundraiser with a raffle for the kids. We have several different vendors who bring ocean safety and water safety materials, and we have a scholarship program scholarship presentations from both the Morro Bay Community Center and the Surf Rider Foundation, and the Al French Memorial Fund will also be awarding some kids some funds to help them put that through the Junior Lifeguard Program. So thanks a lot for your time tonight, and some flyers over here, and have a good evening.
Thank you. Okay. We decided to give staff the night off as far as announcements, but Zeke, I do need you on the overhead. There's the first one. Okay. This coming Saturday, Mermaid and Pirate Parade. We meet at 10 o'clock in front of the Rock. Voting choices very quickly. There was a campaign forum here last week. It's being run again on AGP Channel 20. And it's shown, they couldn't give me a definite time because they never know how long the meetings they broadcast are going to be. But check in the afternoons if you want to see it, or after the meetings in the evening. And it's also available on slowspan.com, so you can actually watch it on your computer. Please do that. Get familiar with the candidates, because there's some very important decisions that your elected officials are going to make over the next terms. Other available information, the Bay News, their website is TolosaPress.com. You can read the interviews and questions that have been answered by the candidates. The Tribune, SanLuisObispo.com, could go under candidate information, and same thing, you can read the answers to their questions. The Slow Coast Journal is online, slowcoastjournal.com. There's articles on the candidates, and also More Musings, which is my column, has my comments. So please read the literature you get in the mail. A lot of thought goes into that, and more than anything, talk to the candidates. They would love to be able to speak with you. So if you have questions or you want to learn about them, call them, go to their websites, email them. That's the best way to get to know whether they are the person that you want to represent you and your city for the next 2 or 4 years. Please take it very seriously. It's a very important job, and you're giving these people your trust. So that's my pitch. Really vote carefully. Okay? That's all my announcements. Betty?
Speaking of the campaign, Saturday night, there were campaign signs that were taken off of Atascadero Road, Highway 41, between Silver City and the beach, of all denominations, not just a particular candidate, but all. And a person who lives down there called me. I called the police department, and I alerted some of the other candidates to that. So hopefully people are aware that that's a federal offense, that you are not to take campaign signs from anywhere. It's not a joke. It's serious. People spend hundreds of dollars on some of these signs and thousands for yard signs. And if you get caught, it is a federal offense. Moving on to a lighter note, the Water Resource Advisory Committee met last week, and the biggest, I think, discussion we had was related to the Water Board is putting down some ag requirements about those of us that probably doesn't affect the city particularly, but we do have residents who live in Morro Bay that have farms or are on the edge of our community. And there is a meeting coming up at the Water Board, and the RAC will be discussing it as well next month at our first meeting on Wednesday at 1:30, in the library conference room. If you have opinions and you want to express those about the requirements that the Water Board's bringing down for ag users. And then briefly, the water levels in our reservoirs, except for Lopez, the others are at around 50% to 60%. So in spite of all the rain that we've had this year, our reservoirs are not full. They're trying to make up for the past years of drought. And then just a reminder to the boaters that you need to get your boats checked as you go into our local lakes for the quagmire contaminant, the little guy that comes in and will attach to and grow like rabbits and clog up the infrastructure that people use for our communities to bring water to us. And so it's real important that we be aware of that.
Okay, Rick.
Thank you. Thursday, June 3rd, is Hunger Awareness Day in San Luis Obispo County. Last year, $120,000 was raised. Barnett, Cox, and Associates are going to be distributing donation sites in all the cities and in this city, and I think it's going to be at City Hall. But I will get a hold of them and find out where it's going to be. And if it's not City Hall, we'll let you know. We'll put it on the website. My wife was serving at Prado Daycare Center today. I didn't get a chance to talk to her about the numbers, but pretty soon we're going to be getting in the summer months, and all these summer programs that we have for low income are not going to be there. So we expect to see a lot more kids coming through Prado. So please participate in this. What I think I'd like to do is maybe pass the hat at the next meeting and get some cash. And also, of course, any canned food or perishables that you want to donate to the Prado, please give them a call and make arrangements to drop that off, because the need is there and it's just going to get bigger and bigger. Thanks.
Thank you. I've got a couple of announcements. One to follow up on Mr. Gibson's comments. I don't expect to be in the lead by any means, especially last year. We had some fine riders going into San Luis, and looking forward to next week, because all week long we do have free breakfasts available for those that are biking to work. And it does happen to have Morro Bay Coffee, our own coffee shop up by the roundabout, mbnep.org. That's mbnep.org. And should be a lot of fun. And thanks to the ESHRAE program for putting that on. Also, another update, we are the ESHRAE program is still interviewing for the director's position. They're in that process, and I'm sure we'll start to hear some announcements potentially about final candidates or a hiring at some point in the future. And I believe Mandy tonight is going to be doing also an announcement about the whale rally that Mr. Gibson mentioned, but I will mention it again as well. It's the 23rd of May at The Rock, 10 a.m. We have some really exciting speakers there that come from around the state to talk about the future of whales, the potential for whale hunting to begin again, and commercial whaling, and to focus on the importance of whales as a real keystone mammal, largest mammal on the planet, and especially for Morro Bay, the amount of importance it has to us with with whale watching and celebrating its their annual pilgrimage from the north to the south and the return of that. So those are my announcements. Quick check-in as well with the particulate matter study for the Air Pollution Control District Board that I sit on. We are having our second meeting focused on the Napomo Mesa off-road vehicle riding park in Oceano on May 19th. That's going to be, instead of at the APCD or the Board of Supervisors chambers, we're going to be actually in the City of San Luis Obispo City Council chambers, and that's at 9 a.m. And the focus will be discussing what the APCD Board's jurisdiction is as far as its power and a discussion regarding some comments related to the state parks and other concerned groups about the particulate matter study. So that's going to be May 19th.
Okay. Thank you. Carla? Good evening. Thank you. And I know we don't have staff reports tonight, but I believe Wednesday is Police Memorial Day. Is that correct? In Atascadero. And what time is that at?
10 o'clock.
Thank you. At 10 a.m. At Atascadero's Lake Pavilion. Is that where it is? Thank you for anyone who can attend. The EVC, I have two updates for the Economic Vitality Corporation is hosting a workshop on Friday, June 4th, here in Morro Bay from 8 a.m. to 12. It's co-hosted with the Morro Bay and Los Osos Chamber of Commerce, and if you go to their website, you can get more information and register to attend that Thriving in 2010, Learn How to Grow Your Business. So that's a great opportunity for some of the merchants to get some ideas for some new innovative advertising and things. Also, Wednesday, June 2nd at the Paso Robles Event Center is an economic forecast through UCSB mid-year, and that's being hosted by the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce and Paso Chamber of Commerce. So you can go to either one of those two websites to register online for those, and they have free rides. And then last, I have not had a meeting for 2 months until this Wednesday for the Integrated Waste Management, but we will be covering our year plans, and there's a lot on the table as far as the take back program still and some new legislation that they're going to be supporting. So I will bring that back after the meeting. Thank you.
No, you had one more?
Yeah, I did have a follow-up. We do have our joint powers agreements meeting coming up with Cayucas Morro Bay this Thursday at the Vets Hall in Cayucas, 6 p.m. Part of that will be a presentation, a report from Mr. Grantham and myself, Mike Foster, and Mr. Robert Enns from Cayucas on our field trip to Santa Paula, and we'll be discussing and reviewing that, the experience of that trip. So for those of you who have contacted us, that would be a good place to hear more about that.
And now Carla has one more.
I just forgot. Next Wednesday, the 19th at 5 o'clock, is the city budget workshop.
Thank you.
Could I ask Carla, anything new on the pharmacy take back?
It's Integrated Waste Management will still be looking at it. It's about pretty much the lack of funding at the state to implement it, but the pharmacy opening here in town is the same one that's from Cambria and does do a take back program for your expired prescriptions that are non what's the word I'm looking for, the, you know, the hard drugs. So
all right. That concludes our announcements. There was no closed session, so we have no closed session report. So now we will start public comment. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes.
Good evening, Mayor, Council, and staff. My name is Keith Taylor. I'm a resident of Morro Bay. 2006, I worked on the Measure Q committee along with Mayor Peters, Councilman Grantham, and Councilman Pierce. We also had quite a few people from the community, and you guys agreed and upheld that. The reason I'm here speaking, I know that all of us worked really hard to get this thing done, okay? And it seems to me like staff's trying to go through the back door to get this money, put it in the general fund. Well, I'm completely against that. Okay, and what I think you should do as a council is give direction to the city manager that you only spend Measure Q money on these four items. Okay, because that's what we the people decided And you are the board of directors of our city. And you're the one that gives direction, and she'll follow it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. Ken Vesterfelt, resident of Morro Bay, reporting on the car show that a week ago was one huge success. We have never seen so many spectators on a Saturday continually from 8 o'clock until all the way through 4. Some of the businesses have told me that they had record-breaking days for that, so it was just wonderful. Wanted to thank the Rotary Club of Morro Bay, who took care of the information booth and did one heck of a job on the barbecue. They also had some tuna there, thanks to Giovanni's. And the police explorers, Post 43, three young gentlemen who were doing the job of what 5 and 6 used to do, out there at 5 o'clock in the morning, out there posting the street closures days before, and did one heck of a job, and I've got to give them a lot of kudos. Chamber of Commerce, who did a great job on the treasure hunt. And believe me, the ladies of the car participants, they have to have that treasure hunt. And probably over 100 volunteers, if you add up the people who had to come in for the cruise and the people who helped with the barbecue. Great community effort. The Bay Cruisers, who put on the Thursday night feed and music and libation for the car, for people who come in and register, and local people who register on Thursday night. Unfortunately, we're losing some business through the hotels. I've had car show people who are staying, told me they're staying in Cayucas and they're staying in San Luis because of the price of the hotels are increased. I checked on those hotels about 3 weeks before, and definitely on that weekend, the prices have increased. On a good note, we had two motels that participated in the car show, and that's John and Joan Solo, who I think it's called the Garden House Suites. They gave us, or gave the car show participants, a night stay for next year. And Ken Scott at Estero Inn donated two nights stay for the car show this year. And of the businesses that were affected, and I'm assuming that all along Morro Bay Boulevard and Main Street, probably everybody was affected by that. We had four businesses that participated to the car show. We're hoping to increase that. To get their participation. And so overall, it was a wonderful event. I just want to thank the local people also, because cars were parked for blocks and blocks around, and it was wonderful. Want to say on Measure Q again, there was a huge promise by this council when we were going after Measure Q to increase, that this would only be used for Measure Q for those four items. Please consider that. Don't let you be another city that says, hey, we're going to tell you what we're going to do, but then we turn your back on you. And the last thing is, folks, use your right to vote. Get out there, vote for the candidate of your choice, and it is your choice. If you don't like them, write in. At least go vote. Thank you.
Thank you.
Susan Heineman, resident of Morro Bay. Chairperson, City Council members, TV audience, good evening. In this recessionary time, top to low on the economic ladder, everyone seems to want a deal. Well, the Community Garden has a deal for you for only $10. You will receive for your $10 a dinner of Spencer's Finest Organic Chicken, barbecued to perfection by Jesse's Barbecue of Morro Bay Farms, served with beans, bread, salad, or a side, homemade desserts, and old-fashioned lemonade, all enjoyed in the ambiance of the garden, like a big picnic with tables. In addition, for the children, we have a kids' corner featuring a puppet show, face painting, and a chance to make garden stepstones decorated with pebbles, a handprint, pottery pieces, etc. Sorry, no pinata this year. We heard. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councilman, thank you so much for all the work you do and all the time you put in. It's pretty incredible. I'd just like to...
Could we have your name, please?
Excuse me. Barry Brandon, Morro Bay. I'd just like to request, as we go forward with the process, with the sewer program that we're encompassing and all the money we're going to spend, that since it is probably the largest investment the city's made in many years, I'd like to hope that you do as much as you can to develop transparency. And by this, I mean that at your city council meetings, where a lot of people, that's the only information they get about what the city's doing is from these meetings we're having here, is if you could give us a report, maybe have the progress, the timeline of what's happening and when it's happening, and if it was done at the city council meeting so the citizens could see it, I think that transparency is very important because it takes away fears and questions and will probably encourage more participation and more interest by the citizens. And so I would just request you do that. And again, thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Bill Martini. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the JPA meeting and lead into it by mentioning that there was a group of people, and it was mentioned Rick and Noah, myself, my wife, Bob Stahl, and a few of us went down to Santa Paula to view the PERC plant that we've all been hearing about. That just coming online. In fact, Ruth, your bicycle fit? Getting out of here? The reason I mention this is we saw a plant that was extremely impressive. Half the footprint of what Morro Bay is proposing, zero odors, the water quality at the other end. We had Noah drinking the water. I mean, sewage in one side, here he's scooping at the other side. It was totally recyclable. They're sending it to the farmers to perk into the aquifer. It's less expensive, state-of-the-art, and I just think that if the council members, the different ones involved, I know Robert Enns went down, that everyone should go down. The city of Santa Paula invited anyone down that wants to see it. When we had the presentation outside of the plant and the cost that is less and a much superior product, two former mayors of Santa Paula, the present mayor of Santa Paula, were there raving about it. They said they were 2 years and $2 million into the old-style plant when they switched horses in midstream. Best thing they ever did. The mayor pro tem of Fillmore, who I talked to for quite a while, said they went the route that Morro Bay is going. And they said the biggest mistake they ever made. The bid came in. There are about 15,000 people, similar to Morro Bay Cayucas. $28 million was their cost. When they got done, it was $80 million. It sunk them, and they just said, whatever you do, if you need to call me or come down, take a visit, think. And with this new technology and that, it really is state-of-the-art. It is impressive. The upper half, the whole system is underground. The upper half could be a teen center. When you're in the actual plant, you don't even know you're in a sewer plant. It can be located any place. So I would just say, nothing else, explore it, look into it. People should get involved. This is the biggest ticket item for Morro Bay and Cayucas that's ever come about. And I just say, before jumping in, at least look at both options before going forward. And I know you think it's a little late in the game, but it's not, especially what Santa Paula had to say. The other thing I'll mention is Malibu was right behind us on the tour, and it was just, let's see, what am I? I'm stumbling for words right now, but it's just something that we really need to explore. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi there, Mandy Davis. I live in Los Osos now. Hi, you guys. Long time no see. I would like to thank Noah and Bruce for mentioning not only the event that will be happening on the 23rd, but also the resolution that is before you. I would like to thank the city of Morro Bay incredibly for adopting this resolution to protect the whales and to oppose the resumption of commercial whaling and quotas on the gray whale. We are incredibly fortunate in this county to be able to view the whales, to see them on their yearly migrations, to experience these incredible creatures, sentient, intelligent, beautiful, and ancient. We've all had a chance, or most of us have had a chance, to see these creatures. What many of you have not had a chance to see. The gray whale populations are really hurting. They are in decline. There are starving, and there are starving adults that are showing up emaciated, and the calf count is way low. So given this, you know, it is our responsibility, and I'm glad that you guys are taking this responsibility seriously, to tell the administration no, to let them know that they are about to take a huge mistake. And they can change the delegations, basically, you know, what they are mandated to tell the delegation at any point in time. It's not a legislative process. So we are going to have a very large protest, event, rally, whatever you would like to call it, on May 23rd. It will be happening in all coastal counties in California. This will be a major media event, and Obama will be told in no uncertain terms that California will not support this. So I ask all of you to come to this event. We have some incredible speakers, and put your word in there for the whales.
Okay? Thank you.
Thanks.
Hi, Virginia Hiramatsu, Morro Bay, up here just to remind everybody once again about the Relay for Life that we'll be having in August 7th and 8th. And tomorrow night will be a committee meeting for anybody who wants to work behind the scenes or help in any way with the Relay for Life. And then on next Tuesday, the 18th, will be a meeting for team captains. And anybody who wants to be part of Relay for Life, please come to either of the meetings. And you can also go online to relayforlife.org/Morro Bay CA to sign up for, to start a team, to join a team, or whatever. But we are looking to get more and more people. And there are several teams that have already started, and they are online. You can join any of the teams now. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Nancy Johnson, your best choice for city council. And now I'm not the only one who thinks so, because if you read the Tribune yesterday, you know that they think so too. That was about the best Mother's Day gift I got, I think. I want you to get to know me. Here I am. I have been around doing a lot of neighborhood coffees. And if anybody out there in our audience would like to get a few friends together, two or three or four, I'll come by and you can ask me all the questions you want. I'll be at Albertsons on Wednesday around noon. Stop by and ask questions. I'll be at Farmers Market again on Thursday. Your ballots went out yesterday. Today, if you are a permanent absentee voter, and along with that, I have a mailer that went out. It does have the information, my phone number, my email address, and my website, and my Facebook address. And I've put that up there so that I don't have to try to read them all off for people. Please feel free to call me, not at midnight, but, you know, anytime up until 9 or 10 in the evening. I'm always willing. I've had a few phone calls, and I appreciate the opportunity to visit with people and tell them how I feel and what I stand for. Also, I enjoy getting emails. There were some people who were complaining about potholes on their street, and boy, did I know what they were saying, because I have some. A small child could fall in and you'd never see him again. But so we emailed back and forth a little bit, and I think I answered some of their questions. I'm not sure, but we worked at it. So please get to know me. I expect to be a member of City Council soon, and I appreciate everybody's vote. And the reason I'm running for City Council is because I really care about Morro Bay. I care about what happens, and I'm planning to settle down and do a lot of hard work after the election. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good evening, Council. My name is Bill Yates. I'm a resident of Morro Bay, and I'm running for mayor. I am still on my journey to hopefully get the city long before the November elections focused on a business-friendly attitude. And I won't go through the stories, and some of you heard it recently, and they're still happening. We have four great bands. Bootsy Marengo is coming back after a three-year semi-retirement. This will be their first concert in over 3 years. They had a huge following previously. Luperphonic from Chicago is coming in. They'll be playing second. Big Daddy's Blues Band, who's been playing in the county forever, is just a fabulous blues band. Will be playing, and the headliner that evening will be Cadillac Angels. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Lots of food and beer and great music. We're asking a dollar donation or a can of food at the door, but nobody's going to be turned away, so technically it's free. You can leave a dollar, great. You can leave a can of food for the food bank, great. So I hope we see everybody there Saturday, June 5th. Thanks for allowing me to come up.
Thank you.
Hello. I'm Marshall Ohilski. I'm running for a supervisor for the 2nd District. I guess this is candidate's hour right now with the three of us up here. I wanted to stop by, though, and just talk a little bit about an issue that I think affects the city of Morro Bay and affected the city of Morro Bay. Before I start, though, I'd like to say that the car show that weekend was just awesome. I mean, it was just unbelievable, the amount of people were here. And I think the tourism and just the general vibration and the energy that was shown in the community, I thought was really, really nice. Anyways, I just want to address an issue or a question that Supervisor Gibson and I had a forum last Friday, and I know this question was asked, but it wasn't asked of us, so I just wanted to talk a little bit about it. And it's one of the reasons that I decided to run for this office, and it had to do with the removal of the sphere of influence from Morro Bay. And as staff knows and as the city council knows, I worked closely with staff in trying to negotiate with LAFCO a solution to what was really, I think, in my opinion, at least a non-problem. There was an acknowledgement that the sphere of influence, which is the area that the city has semi-control under, where you have a say in how it develops out, I think there was a general acknowledgement by staff and city council that it was too big. LAFCO decided not only was it too big, but they decided to remove it in its entirety, except for a real small portion over by the beach where the dog beach is. But the rest of the sphere of influence was totally removed from the city of Morro Bay. And, you know, when we met with staff and we met with the LAFCO board members, of which Supervisor Gibson is one, quite frankly, we never got a good answer as to why they removed it. And I think my concern is, and my concern was at that time, and I know it was the city's concern, because I really, truly believe it was a bad decision. I mean, if you think about it, Morro Bay is the only city in the state of California, except for landlocked cities, that has no sphere of influence. So you have no say on how the development occurs in the periphery or adjacent to your city limits, and I think that's wrong. I think it was a wrong decision. So in reality, what's happened here is decision-making on the perimeters of the city have been turned over from the local people, which is you five, to five supervisors that are elected from five different districts. And I think that's really problematic. I think, yes, the sphere was too big, but I think the local control was overwhelming, and I think you should have kept local control, and there should have been a smaller sphere of influence. You know, now you're facing issues with the Charles Wells, etc., but that was taken out of your sphere of influence, unfortunately. So I think I just wanted to, you know, say that I'm running basically as an inclusionary type campaign, and there's issues that I feel strongly about in every community, but in Morro Bay, it's really that sphere of influence that really bothers me the most, and that's really one of the issues that I would like to see addressed and corrected relative to Morro Bay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh,
Well, as you can probably tell, I wasn't planning on getting up here tonight. But I just wanted to remind everyone at the business.
We need your name.
Oh, what's my name? Hi, I'm Deanna Kennedy, and I'm a candidate for city council. Anyway, I just wanted to remind everyone that there's a business forum every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. at the Embarcadero Grill. This is affording us the opportunity right now as candidates to get up there and speak and let people ask us questions so we can open up to them and find out what their concerns are. This Thursday, Nancy Johnson and I will be there. Rick just spoke. But this is a great opportunity, and whether it's now or later, they have it every Thursday, and there's so much information there that not only helps you as a citizen, but it helps Morro Bay. Anyway, that's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else? All right. We'll close the public comment. Bring it back to council. Any comments on comments?
Just follow up.
Okay, we're going to get back to work. So if you have conversations, please take them outside. All right. We do have some staff waiting on some consent items, so why don't we do that first? And anybody want to pull anything on consent?
A6, please.
Okay. Anything else?
A1.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion approving A2, 4, and 5, and 7, please.
So move.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, Noah, A1.
Yes, thank you. A1, page 5, it's our minutes from the last meeting. And I just wanted to clarify here under A3, the little mini sentence there that Councilmember Smuckler on page 5.
I just realized Jamie's not
here.
No. That's what I said. We don't
Andrea?
Have stuff.
It's real simple. I requested any updates on the state water shutdown schedule instead of components was my focused question there.
Okay, why don't you say it once more now that Jamie's back.
Instead of components, shutdown schedule.
Okay.
And if there's no other comments on the minutes with that change.
I actually had a question in the next to the last line that said, November is traditionally a shutdown in December. We don't meet all of our allocation. Do we meet an allocation or do we receive an allocation? And if it's in the same paragraph, A3, the next to the big paragraph that starts with Dylan Wade, and it's the next to the last full line, and it actually starts on the line before. Sorry, November is traditionally a shutdown, and December we don't meet all of our allocation. And I'm apologizing ahead of time. I was gone all weekend. I didn't have access to a computer. Okay. So, I don't know how.
Do we meet an? Yeah, I see what you're saying. Do we meet an allocation, or do we receive an allocation, or do we use an allocation?
We receive it. Okay.
Traditionally, in November or December, it's usually November. We don't receive our state water allocation.
So, receive would be more clear.
Okay, so should I compose a motion?
Yeah.
Okay, I move that we approve item A1 with the adjustment to item A3 within A1, replacing components with shutdown schedule and meet with receive.
Second.
Okay, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No. All right, and then Betty, A6.
A6, I just lost. There it is. A6 is regarding the compensation for the six-month contract extension with the MV Transportation. And thank you, Ms. Bernanke, for showing up. And again, I apologize for not getting to you ahead of time. My question is really in the second paragraph under fiscal impact. And I had no idea what to compare that with. If this is the same, more or less, than what we're currently paying.
For the fixed monthly fee, it is less. We're paying over $10,000, something like $10,300, $10,600 per month for the fixed monthly management fee. The vehicle, and that's for the management insurance. There's a lot of fixed costs associated with the day-to-day operations of it. And then the vehicle service hour fee, the $23.35, is a little bit higher than what we're currently paying. We're paying $21.38, and that is your driver wages and benefits. And currently how they have been adjusted from year to year during the contract has been a CPI adjustment. This last year, during this fiscal year, that went down by about a little over 2%. And so what you're seeing with this rate is going to be what the drivers are actually getting paid now versus what they had bid, MV had bid on the original contract.
Which was lower?
Which was lower.
Okay. And of this $10,300 a month, that's actually losing personnel, right? It's actually eliminating positions.
There's a dispatching. I think Susan Brown, the general manager, had mentioned that it was one and a half dispatching full-time equivalent.
Plus driver, or is this just the dispatch?
The fixed component is just your management and office staff, which would be the dispatcher. The vehicle service hour fee.
How well it will be able to service people who can't come to the stops. And if they'll give up, you know, and say, well, only one or two people can be taken an hour, so I'm, you know. And maybe that's just as well that they try to find neighbors that help them or not. Or hopefully we can go to the volunteer program, and that would be really valuable. And I guess I'm just I'm seeing MV give up all this. I don't know what we as a city are doing to try to help this. Is it how much allocation do we – how much of the transit budget goes back to the main budget as opposed to going towards actually personnel and driver hours?
The city's cost allocation for the transit is well, it had been about $92,000. With the next fiscal year, that is with the – and I don't know whether – well, Susan Slayton just stepped out. I don't know if the revised cost allocation plan has come before the council yet for adoption and the timing for that, but we're to be using the new numbers, the revised numbers, and that is about $108,000.
So about a third of the budget that goes to transit actually comes back into the general fund.
It's a little less than that for the current fiscal year.
Okay. So maybe some place to do something. Okay. I don't know if there's any other concern.
Oh, yeah.
Carla?
My concerns, well, are many, and I did get a chance to talk to Ms. Burlingame just for a few minutes, is I was not supportive of even extending the 6 months, and my reasons are many, as you can see, that just this six-month contract extension, the dial-a-ride's costing us about $600 a day to run, $70 to $75 an hour. And I feel like it's extremely premature because my understanding when we brought this forward and we voted on it to extend it 6 months, it was for the dial-a-ride. And this is including the trolleys, and we haven't even determined if we're going to run the trolleys or not. And so I'm a little concerned that this is part of the contract listed here, that we're extending for 6 months when we haven't even determined as a council if we're going to be running a trolley, one, two, three. And even if we run one, my understanding after speaking with Ms. Burlingame, the same as running the dial-a-ride, that fixed cost of $2,240 a month is there whether we run one of them or three of them. It's just the hourly that changes based on the number of hours the trolleys mm-hmm. run. So I just, you know, I can't believe that there's even an increase in any of this when we're in a recession and we're laying employees off, and yet these dial-a-ride employees are going to get a pay raise. I just $600 a day to run it is just outrageous, and I would hope that looking into the contract comes back, or putting it out for an RFP comes back sooner than later, because mm-hmm. this is just outrageous, the price.
I guess I don't have a concern with the increase because our staff is getting increases this year as well. I think more what you raised that I didn't pay attention to was that this is both the trolley and the dial-a-ride, mm-hmm. and that's true. We haven't discussed that as a budget item yet, so I'm wondering if we need to postpone this.
Is the trolley not included in the budget already?
What the council did at your last meeting was extend the contract with MV Transportation, which was for the dial-a-ride service, which at that meeting you changed from for July 1 from the dial-a-ride type service to the flex fixed route service, which is what the compensation rate for the flex route that you have here. The other part of that agreement is the trolley service. And so that was extended. The whole contract was extended for 6 months.
And you've addressed that in the budget that's coming forward.
Correct. We have put together a budget for both the flex route and the trolley services that the council will be seeing at your first budget workshop on the 19th.
But that wasn't what we voted for. We voted to extend the dial-a-ride contract, and I, until I saw this, didn't realize that it was even including the element of the trolley at this point. So, my vote 2 weeks ago went strictly to extend the contract for dial-a-ride.
That was my understanding as well, and probably our ignorance because they are tied together. But our whole conversation 2 weeks ago was surely just focused on the dial-a-ride, I think.
Well, for the contract extension, it was the whole contract. It was for the dial-a-ride services and the trolley services because the existing contract ends June 30th. Mm-hmm. So it was to extend the current agreement beyond June 30th. And the council chose at that point, rather than doing the month-to-month, was to do a six-month extension.
That's true. Of dial-a-ride service, we never discussed the trolleys at all. I'm going to look back because I know I would not have voted to support the trolley knowing that we haven't even had a discussion yet on what service level we're going to provide with them. And there's no way I know I would not have voted for it. And we would have discussed it if it was part of it.
Madam Mayor, can we ask if we have to vote on this tonight or can we wait until after budget meeting?
We voted to approve a contract. How far has that gone? No. Okay.
I actually am looking at your minutes from item B2, and there is mention of the trolley. It says staff recommends City Council conceptually approve a month-to-month extension of the current Morro Bay dial-a-ride and trolley operations and management agreement of MB Transportation. We've got the minutes in the packet, so you can take a look at those.
It's one contract, so you really can't separate them out. That's but if you were looking to change the trolley services, then you shouldn't approve the contract this evening until you know exactly the trolley services that you're going to want written up in the contract. So it was staff's assumption that the trolley services were basically saying the same as previous years. That wasn't brought forward as an item. It was just to change the dial-a-ride, and your trolley services were going to remain for another summer as they have been for the past summers, and the funds are available for that, at least from a budget item, but it hasn't been approved, and you could withdraw those funds. I don't know how much general funds. Maybe Janine can ask how much is in general funds and how much is transit funds.
Currently, for the trolley service, there's no proposed general funds for the trolley for this coming fiscal year.
So if you did stop it and reduce trolley services, you're not going to be able to use those funds for other purposes.
Right. It seemed to me that, I mean, I felt we were voting on the whole contract, including the trolley, and that the trolley wasn't an issue, that was going to continue with the same service. The only thing that was going to be reduced was the fixed flex route for the dial-a-ride.
Council, you may recall last year your direction to us was to back out the trolley out of general fund subsidy, and we did that in this current fiscal year's budget, and we continued that with next fiscal year's budget.
Would the trolley funding part of it be a use it or lose it?
The revenue that makes up the trolley services that offsets the operating costs are advertising revenues that are on the vehicle. So if trolley service is cut or eliminated, those funds go away because there's nobody putting an advertising space on it. There are the fares, which if you cut back on service, you're cutting back on the amount of ridership and the fares. There's not a direct translation that or an assumption that those riders would then ride the new flex route service. Some might on the Fridays and Mondays that the service operates, but there's no Saturday or Sunday flex service. So you would lose fare revenue for that. The other revenue that's in the budget is parking and lieu funds, and those have a specific designation which could not translate at this point over to the flex route service. They're specific to getting people out of the cars in the parking areas in just outside of the waterfront and downtown areas and bringing them in.
Well, and I would remind the council, too, you've got the same drivers doing both jobs. They switch off. So do you really want them paid one rate for the dial-a-ride work that they do and another rate for the trolley? And that just doesn't seem practical to me. It's the same driver. Their value is equal. I don't see why that's a concern.
My concern is, I mean, it's coming from the parking in lieu. It's being funded. It doesn't support itself. It never has. And so if we're considering cutting one or two of the trolleys out and only running one route, perhaps, whatever we decide, we're still going to be paying the fixed cost.
But even so, does it really matter what we're paying the driver? Isn't the driver still worth
I'm not talking value? About the driver even. I'm talking about the MV's cost, the $2,240 a month fixed cost, plus the cost allocation, which I'm not sure how it's derived at this point.
Well, with regard to the cost allocation, there is an allocation amount for the trolley, although it has never been actually charged to the trolley budget.
We have Susan Brown here. Does anyone want to get her input? Do you have anything to offer? No? Okay. All right. Well, I'm not looking to change anything. My vote would remain the same. Does someone else want to?
Well, I think I asked a question. Is it possible to wait a week or two to approve this, or do we need to do it tonight? We need to do it tonight?
Well, you haven't told the contract is until June 30th. So unless Janine has something different on, you know, we currently have a current agreement that goes till June 30th, I'm sure MV would like to know sooner rather than later exactly the amount. But, you know, if there's budget issues, that the numbers might be changed next week.
Adopted Resolution 1510, which initiated proceedings to levy an annual assessment to the fund to fund the maintenance of the cloisters and open space. Additionally, staff was directed to have an engineer's report prepared detailing the estimated annual assessment for the parcel owners for the fiscal year 2010-11. Both are included for your review. Based on the engineer's report, annual costs for maintaining the cloisters park and open space for the upcoming year are estimated at $148,944. Upon your adoption of Resolution 2210, the next and final step in the annual levy of assessment process is to host a protest hearing or public hearing. Therefore, staff is recommending the City Council adopt Resolution 2210, which approves the engineer's report and states the City's intent to levy an annual assessment for the maintenance of the cloisters, park, and open space. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Any questions for staff?
I have a couple.
All right.
I've noticed that a number of people have had the medians in the front of their house kind of redone. How does that work? I mean, are they doing that on their own? Is it less work for our city staff or more? And because I thought we were still taking care of those medians.
Yes, part of our agreement is to maintain all the medians as well as the parkways in front of the houses. We've addressed that with our limited resources. We are strategizing for the upcoming year, but there are some homeowners that have taken upon themselves with their own initiative to do some plantings and some additional care. Mm-hmm. Others haven't, and they've been a little bit, they've suffered a bit. Staff's definitely aware of that. We've talked to several residents out there on site, and we do have a plan to improve those parkways, particularly the ones in front of the houses.
So there's not a, it's something that's being worked out. It's not an issue.
It's not an issue other than it needs to get done sooner than later for the residents out there at the cloisters, but it's certainly a responsibility of the cities.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. This is a public hearing. Anyone wishing to speak on this issue, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. I'm going to entertain a motion.
Move approval of B1.
Second.
All in favor?
I'd like some discussion.
Discussion. I'm sorry.
I would like to ask that we add a recycle can to the park area. I think this is something we need to start doing with each of our parks, and I'm going to also suggest it for the North Point. I know it's an extra piece of work, but I figure if we can carry out one bag of trash, we can carry out a second bag of recycle. I know it's like, well, where do we? I don't know where it's going to go, but maybe in some other recycle can on the Embarcadero. But I think it's real important that we start getting recycle bins into the parks. And I'd like that to be part of this list that we have at the end of our document, that where it says, you know, trash, also recycle. And I'm happy with one.
Okay.
I don't know if the council would agree to that.
I like that intent. I'd be interested to hear from Mr. Woods.
Thank you. It's a growing concern of ours as well. We've tried to address recycling on several different areas. My report tonight, which we kind of terminated, but I had a report that we do have new recycling containers, receptacles for our buildings. So we see some in the back of this facility. We also have a number of them at the Morro Bay Community Center as well. So hopefully that'll help out. As far as the parks goes, we have limited resources, obviously. We've had our budgets cut. We lost a halftime position last fiscal year. And adding recycling containers, receptacles to parks is obviously doubling our work out there in the parks with the limited amount of maintenance guys that we have. So we're a little bit skeptical on getting into new services when we have reduced resources. But we certainly look into something that could hopefully facilitate that area with minimal maintenance impact.
How much does a container cost? Just a very basic, round, blue lid?
Well, the plastic ones we have here are, I think, somewhere around $40 or $50, but they're inside. We're talking about something that's going to be weatherproofed, outside, vandal-resistant, be able to secure it. And oftentimes you see heavy aggregate receptacles because the public can't move them or vandalize them that easily. Some of the ones that are less sustainable, they deteriorate quickly. You've noticed that along the aggregates that have recycling units along the Embarcadero and along Main Street and the Boulevard. That doesn't take them long to get corroded and get torn up. So the cost, just the aggregate trash receptacles that you see are about $2,500.
What if we just got a blue bin from the garbage company?
We could get a roll-off and get roll-off service. I'd have to do a little bit further investigation. I could test it out and see if it's working out for us without any promise for any major longevity. If we could just try it out and it works, we'll continue. That'd be fair enough.
Absolutely.
I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you for compromising.
Okay, then do you want to add that to your motion, Rick?
Are you okay with the recycle container?
Sure.
Okay. I have a second. Okay. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? None. All right. Item B2, resolution approving the engineer's report and declaring the intent to levy the annual assessment for the North Point Natural Area Landscaping and Lighting Maintenance Assessment District.
Again, thank you and good evening. On April the 12th, again, Council adopted Resolution 1610, which initiated the proceedings and levy the annual assessment for the fund to maintain North Point Natural Area. Additionally, staff was directed to prepare an engineer's report, and it details the estimated annual assessment for the parcel owners for the next fiscal year, 2010-2011. Both of those are in your packet for review. Based on the engineer's report, annual costs for maintaining the North Point Natural Area for the upcoming year totaled $5,645. Upon your adoption of Resolution 2310, the next and final step in this levy, annual levy of assessment process, is to host a protest hearing or public hearing. Therefore, staff is recommending council adopt resolution 2210, which approves the engineer's report and states the city's intent to levy an assessment for the maintenance of the North Point Natural Area. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Any questions on this one? This is a public hearing. Anyone interested in speaking, please come forward. And seeing none, we'll bring it back to the council. And Betty, you want to make a motion? And
sure, I'll make a motion with the same addition. If you look at attachment A, it mentions empty trash cans. I think there's actually only one can out there. So I'd say trash can and recycle can, one of each. And then move approval.
Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay. And item B3, introduction and first reading of ordinance number 558, amending the Morro Bay Municipal Code, Chapter 2.24, regarding Recreation and Parks Department. Mr. Woods again.
Thank you. Again, good evening. And we were busy on April 12th because we also worked on this one. We actually had your council review the public area use permit procedures. And through that review, it was discovered there were some discrepancies within our city ordinance 2.24. So we would like to make the following recommendations for the amendment of Morro Bay Municipal Code 2.24, recognizing there are additional changes that are not listed but would will be presented for your consideration after review from the city attorney, and I'll point those out. The first amendments come from 2.24. This one's at 020. We're changing administrator to city manager. And then in the second sentence after Recreation Parks Director, or A duly. So substituting there for A, which we believe is the correct way to state that. The next amendment section is 040. Again, in section C, in the event of the director or A duly. And again, after the Recreation Parks Director, a duly appointed representative is also stated in 050. Two more sections we're, we'd like to amend would be section 070. Last sentence, this is a new wording from the city attorney. Any such damage would be changed to any persons causing such damage shall be guilty of a misdemeanor. And so we're adding after any persons causing and then guilty of. The last section that we're looking to amend is the final section, which is 100, which references 2.24070080090 for purposes of citing any violations in those particular sections, and those would be infractions. So I believe that clears up most of what we're trying to do in 2.24. That concludes my report. I'm open to any questions at this time.
Any questions?
My only additional question was regarding the language in 224.100. Where it says, of this chapter shall be guilty of an infraction, and yet under 224.070, there's also the misdemeanor. So I was just hoping to have a little clarification. Can you have a misdemeanor and an infraction at the same time, or is it the level of damage, and how does that work?
Yeah, both 070, 080, and 090 are all.
Janice, by title and number only.
I'm sorry. By title. Okay. All right, so with the corrections and by title and number only are added to the motion, correct? Okay. All right, any more discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? None. Okay, Andrea.
This is an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay to amend Chapter 2.24 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code regarding the duties of the Recreation and Parks Department.
All right. Moving on to our D items, again, in consideration of staff, people that are here, I flipped went to Directive D2, which is consideration of correspondence supporting H.R. 4844 to ensure 100% federal funding of harbor maintenance with the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. And that's Rick's presentation.
Good evening, Madam Mayor and Council. In 1986, Congress passed a tax called the Harbor Maintenance Tax. very small portion of the value of each cargo container that enters the United States as an import is actually taxed and set aside, and it's called in what's called the Harbor Maintenance Trust Fund. In 2008, that was approximately almost $1 billion in harbor maintenance taxes were collected by the federal government. Of that, about $400 million was actually collected from ports and harbors in California because San Pedro, LALB port complex is the largest cargo port in the world. That you can see that most of that cargo tax was actually generated at LALB, but we also have Port of Oakland, Port of San Francisco, Port of San Diego, and some other smaller mid-sized ports in the state. Of the $400 million that was actually collected in taxes in California ports and harbors, only $60 million actually came back for dredging in California ports and harbors. So there's an inequity there. But this legislation is really to address a bigger problem, that the federal government has not been spending all of the taxes created for the specific purpose on maintaining ports and harbors. And the shortfall has been many years on the order of $200-300 million. So what this legislation proposes to do, and it's sponsored by as the mayor well knows, we've been part of this sponsorship and the support for this as our association with California Marine Affairs and Navigations Conference. But it's a very large group of port associations throughout the country, national ports, state ports, regional ports, groups, and many other business groups that are asking the federal government to reaffirm through legislation that they will expend the taxes created for this specific purpose on maintenance of harbors. And we ask that you support or approve a letter to our federal elected officials to support H.R. 44 in the Senate, the same legislation as it's proposed in the Senate.
And I'm going to add to that. When I saw this, it was like, hallelujah, finally. This literally has been something that there was table pounding about, the lack of putting this money into the use that it was designated for in the beginning when it's so desperately needed. So this is wonderful. I'm so excited and really hoping that this is finally going to move. So any questions for staff?
Just a quick one. Out of curiosity, do you have any sense about its chances of passing? Is there any scuttlebutt there?
Well, it's always hard to know, and it would need to be included in the Water Resources Development Act, which is generally every 2 years. There is one that looks like it's going to be introduced in 2010, but that's always even. So will a WERDA, as they call it, update or new WERDA be proposed this year, and will it be approved? It's looking possible. If not this year, probably 2011, 2012. And it looks like it's really getting momentum. We've now have Chairman Oberstar is a very important person. He's sponsored it. So it looks like this probably is getting more and more likely, possibly not this year, but within the next 2 or 3 years.
I have a question. In regard to the letter itself, Mr. Algert, mm-hmm. In the fourth paragraph down, if you don't count the italics in the first short sentence, where it says, we in the port and harbor communities, the whole issue seems to be about maintenance, and yet the words in here, sir, are used for operations and maintenance. Is that okay? Is that not a conflict? Should it just be maintenance?
So I think what that's a reference for, and again, the mayor, branch of the Corps of Engineers that actually executes our maintenance is called the Operation and Maintenance Branch.
Oh, it's an official title?
That is. So that's the reference. And okay. It's a bit of a technical kind of thing, but
so maybe it should be capitalized or something.
Yeah, and I think we thought we handled it by doing O&M afterwards. But you're probably right, it should probably be capitalized.
Okay.
That's a reference to the operation and maintenance function within the Corps of Engineers.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay. I'll move we approve sending this letter.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? No. Okay. Moving right along. Item D.
Previous future meeting. As you know, for the past 3 years, you've been presented with a laundry list of requests for Measure Q funds. These requests are consistent with the ballot language, with numerous materials provided to educate the public on the uses of Measure Q. Again, this is the fourth largest revenue source with which the city has discretionary spending privileges. And with this much money at stake, we recommend that the council adopt a resolution to outline the procedure for staff to use. We've proposed a procedure, and I'd like to go through that briefly. Again, this is for how requests will come to you for Measure Q funding. First of all, we would ask departments, as we have in the past, to submit Measure Q funding requests to the city manager and to the administrative services director well in advance of our first budget hearing. Second, myself and the administrative services director would initially review the prioritized requests into an A and a B list. The A list would include prioritized projects and use the total anticipated funding available. The B list would continue from the A list with priority projects that fall outside the funding amounts, but all requests would be included on the A and B list. We would then meet together as a department head team, review and recommend a list to the city council as a department head team, and then certainly present that in your initial budget document, and then it's certainly up to the council to determine how they would like to fund Measure Q requests. Again, we are hoping to formalize the request procedure tonight, and that's what this staff report is concerning. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Okay. Questions? Betty?
Ms. Luker, just to make sure, you're doing this based on projects now rather than percentages? Like the last year, I think we kind of did it percentages per department.
I believe the first year we did percentages, and that was a little bit that worked all right. In the last 2 years, I believe we've done amounts, but I'm looking backwards
at
Susan.
Okay. And so you're preferring the project direction rather than the percentages?
That's what we would recommend at this point.
Any other questions?
I think step one, that's great. Step two, how do you prioritize? What's your criteria?
Well, it really is going to be a situation where we sit down and we look at the requests that have made. We're looking at a list of requests now that range anywhere from a transit request that was discussed a couple of months ago to a possible vehicle request. To a request from the fire department. So we're going to look and weigh each request and bring that list back to city council. We feel what we're really searching or pushing for is a prioritized request that this department head team can support. At this point, you have requests coming from each department with really no thought from the team on what's a priority and what's not. So we feel it's important to present a prioritized list to you from the department head team.
And I'm just trying to figure it out. And so the reason for, and I may say I appreciate having all the literature that was passed out at the time in one location. That's good, and I'm sure it's helpful for probably the major committee already has that. Where does the Measure Q committee fit into this? It's always after the fact, right? So you're going to generate these items, present them to the council. The council says yes or no. We live with that for half a year or however long, and then the Measure Q committee says, oh, yeah, you did that right or wrong. Is that how that works?
Well, the Measure Q committee's procedure is outlined in your staff report, and I included that. Basically, their requirements... The committee shall have the following functions: semiannual report. The committee shall review a semiannual expense report of the city relative to activities funded with the additional general purpose local sales tax monies, not later than the last day of the sixth month. The committee will present its findings and conclusions to the city council for its review. Mm-hmm. So we're not suggesting changing the clearly the committee's purpose, nor changing what certainly the ballot measure said. We're asking you to formalize a procedure on how we bring requests forward. Certainly, it's always council's decision on how those funds are spent.
Right, and that wasn't my. I was just trying to get the order in my head.
I understand.
And so we're matching on that, and so what sounds like what you're asking for then is like almost it's like a group decision, right? That you want a group decision on saying this is what everyone's agreed upon in terms of staff on this is what we think is helpful.
I think it's important that we bring a unified recommendation to the city council for Measure Q requests versus having the council look at six or seven different requests from different departments and not sure what the priority is.
And then isn't that how you already do the regular budget money anyways? You come with your budget, you ask, you bring... your budgets from your different departments, you set down,
but we don't know until September, August or September of each year. But certainly we keep that in our minds with the police department when they request things.
Noah,
you have a question? Yeah, I also appreciate the information in the report. Good job. On number one within the motion there, I was a little concerned with well in advance. That seems a little loose, and was wondering if you had actually talked about some numbers there as far as when it would return, so we had that kind of a general range of date in mind with that.
Our push is to have the prioritized list to you in your preliminary budget document when you get it. So not this year, because we're deciding on this procedure, and we'll probably be bringing a prioritized list to you a few days after the budget document. You receive the budget document on this Wednesday. But generally, what we're hoping, if you approve this procedure, is that next year, when you get your budget document, your preliminary budget document, on the Wednesday before the next Wednesday meeting, you'll have that prioritized list.
Would, just to be clear with our motion, would you be comfortable with that actually drawn out?
You can. It's pretty much understood. When we this year is a little bit odd, because we wanted to make sure that you. If you were okay with this process, we were going to go ahead and do that this year, and we've already started down that path. But the department heads and I certainly understand the importance of having a complete proposed budget document a week prior to your budget hearing. So I don't think you need to do that. I think that's understood.
Thank you. Yeah, I just I'm thinking this through, and here's my concern, and how is this addressed in this new procedure? When we were doing the percentages the first year, I think we were saying we think this department needs a lot because of whatever, but we wanted to make sure to hit on several different departments, fire, streets and drains, you know, those all things. In fact, we split the drains and the streets up to make sure that they, and it seems to me, and maybe you can help me remember, was this money that was supposed to be above in addition to normal money, and but now it sounds like it's becoming part of the budget process, so it won't really be extra money that goes towards streets. It will become part of that regular budget.
No,
then.
This will still be a separate section.
I understand it'll be
budget.
Separate money, but the way that we'll be figuring it is that you'll be counting on, because you'll be bringing projects to us, well, we can put this in Measure Q, so we don't need to put it in the general budget, whereas before it was... here's how much we need to give to each department for basics, and then here's the extra bonus on top of that with the Measure Q funding. So it just sounds to me like it's being more incorporated into the budget process, though in separate fund. And I'm just, is that where?
No, I don't think I follow your reasoning. I don't particularly see a difference in how we're dealing with it this year than we have any other year. We've certainly had those conversations at the budget hearing about, you know, this can be a Measure Q expenditure and this can't be a Measure Q expenditure. We can deal with percentages again. I think it's a much more effective to deal with actual real dollar numbers than percentages. So I don't particularly have that concern, but I'll throw it back to Susan if she has any further comments. But I think that's not, won't be an issue.
Okay.
I think by doing it the way the city manager proposes, gets you away from any issues, whereas you do a percentage, staff thinks it's following Measure Q, buys a file cabinet, and then finds out it can't. So this way, by doing a project, still be more specific that are specifically approved. Doesn't mean we still won't run into that problem. One was with the storm drain management plan. That was approved and then taken back away, and you had to find it from reserves. But I think it'll give more directions if you do it by project to really know at budget time where you're spending that money, instead of just saying 15-10%.
And that makes sense, and I get that. I think that helps me to hone my concern, is that I want to make sure streets gets extra money every year. And so how do I know that's going to get extra money every year?
Because that you'll see the streets budget, and you'll be able to see the Measure Q budget and see that streets is getting additional funding, because that will be lined out in exactly what this is the proposal for this, these funds.
And I suppose your only concern would be is if your budget comes forward and then the staff getting together and comes up with priority A and B, if for some reason there wasn't on A or B that had anything for streets, mm-hmm. and that doesn't mean council couldn't take away an A or B priority.
We can still do what we want.
Yeah.
Okay. Rick, you have a question?
I'd like to ask the chief, when do you get notified about the upcoming COP grant?
Thank you for that question, and good evening. It is typically in October is when the grant is funded.
Maintain the trust there. I guess generally I would be interested in Measure Q, the committee having a little more interaction on the front end. I know that's not something that is currently in the works, but I would find that valuable and would perhaps address some of the feedback that we get that seems to come after the fact. And I'm not sure what the rest of the council feels about that, but that was something else that came up in my mind as I was reading the report.
Well, I thought of that too, and the one thing that I realized is that the Measure Q committee has never been shy about contacting us if they don't like what the staff has suggested. So I think we'll get that comment anyway. Carla?
Well, I agree with some of the comments they made earlier tonight, and the question is that maybe if they met semi-annually, if they met twice a year, then we could adjust where they may make recommendations rather than waiting until the end of the year on some things that we question then if they were appropriate uses. At this point, I certainly understand that we need to have some sort of guidelines to this, and I can appreciate that. However, for me, you know, saying that too, I also don't feel that the priorities have shifted. You know, we could probably spend the money every year on just our roads and never get them done. So for me personally, I'm not really interested, and I'm going beyond that. So, you know, the staff's going to have this wish list a mile long, and for me, it's still the main focus of taking care of the storm drains and the streets and those things. And last year's money went to one street, the boulevard, and that was it for the most part. So it didn't get much further.
And if I could, just as a reminder, we've got about half of the Measure Q money tied up now. So, you know, with USDA loans for the fire station and...
I don't think it's half, Rick, because we got that grant.
Well,
so it's much less than that now because of the grant.
Yeah, but there was other monies that were tied up. The firefighter position, which is ongoing certainly, and got a couple more years left on the police vehicle repayment plan. So, anyway, just as a heads up, I mean, it's close to half of what's there that's tied up.
It's assumed that our goal setting prioritization workshop is going to be considered as you put together the proposal there.
Yeah, and I'd like to let the council know, we're certainly, the department heads have heard what has been said in the community as well as what the council members have said. So as much as we might want to bring to you a wish list pages long, we clearly are not going to do that. I'm sure there will be some requests on there that are not approved. I think some have some nexus to public safety, but we certainly understand that. So I think my list now, based on the request from the department heads, is about 8 or 9 items long, and that's really the extent of it. It exceeds the money available, of course, and it always will. But it's not something that, you know, it's we hear what people are saying.
Well, and I think we have to recognize too that this is a constantly changing need and funding. I mean, both the amount that comes in and the things that we need it for, once some of these uses that we've already designated are paid off, there is going to be more available to do other things with. And I found it really interesting, finally getting all this information again, that right there in the ballot argument, it talks about maintain city buildings, parks, and restrooms, and restoring after-school programs. I think after-school programs are probably going to be the last one, but I certainly would advocate for using some of this to make sure restrooms, especially during the tourist season, are kept up, because that's embarrassing and that can be hurtful to our tourists' attraction when they walk in and find a dirty restroom. So there, I'm not saying this year or anything, but I am saying that there are more than just 4 things that were mentioned on here, and we have to remember that. Yes, there were 4 main things, but there are some other things that are also important to our community and the way we present ourselves to the public. So, and I'm in agreement that I think this is a good way to look at this. I think that
we can certainly put it into effect, see how it works. I think it's much better than just kind of willy-nilly, which is how we've been doing it lately. Other comments? All right.
Move approval of D3.
I'll second it. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay. Moving on to item D4, which is a resolution on general fund accumulation fund use. And this one, Andrea and Susan.
Thank you, and once again, good evening, Mayor and Council. During the last few years, as we're aware, there's certainly been an economic downturn, and a number of cities across California, as well as the nation, have used their reserves funds to balance their budget. The City of Morro Bay has used our reserve funds irregularly to pay for unexpected or unanticipated expenditures, and certainly only following City Council direct to other cities earlier in the year. And that's provided in your staff report, and it gives you actually, I thought it was a very interesting review of what the other cities are doing, what their reserve amounts are, and how they've specified that reserve or how they have not specified that reserve. We're recommending tonight that you review the possible options for our 27.5% general fund accumulation reserve, and we're happy to bring back a confirming resolution on the use of that if you so desire. I will make a note to you, and you're probably aware of this, is that with the in February of this year, with the transfer of approximately $2.4 million from the risk management reserve to the general fund accumulation reserve, we currently are meeting our 27.5% reserve amount, and that's something that we're happy about. I'm happy to answer any questions, provide any further information as well. Susan Slayton is here to answer any questions.
Okay, questions? Noah?
I have a small question, and it kind of speaks to what the intent of this reserve is for, and the fallback option and the emergency reserve that it really seems to play an important role in. My question would be, could we, as part of the general fund accumulation reserve, have the word emergency in that language so it's clear to the public, anyone looking through our budget or to future councils, that really has and hopefully continues to be the intent there, and those funds are seen as our piggy bank in the worst case situation. So that's my question, and be curious to know if the council's interested in that and if that's possible.
Didn't we used to have it, and that we changed it? That's what I thought. Changed the title of it.
I'm not sure. You can certainly name it whatever you would like. I think what we're looking for is maybe some further delineation, because one person's emergency is another person's mm-hmm. normal operating
right.
mode.
That's
so
why we changed.
I think that's what we're looking for. Is do you even want to do that? And certainly you don't need to, or you don't have to. But you did bring it up at your goal setting workshop, so we're bringing it back to you tonight to talk about. Okay, other questions, Rick?
Yeah. With the $5,000, this is for Susan, please. With the $500,000 in risk management, we would realize about $12,000 to $13,000 a year on interest on that, correct?
Not anymore. The interest rates, of course, have dropped. So you would be looking, I think our interest rate at this time on our portfolio is about 1.5. So you'll be looking more at about $7,500.
Okay. And I'd like to ask Mr. Schultz a question regarding the balance of the risk management fund. And when we made these changes and directed the balance to accumulation and kept $500,000, there was some discussion whether $250,000 would be a comfortable limit.
No, I don't remember that discussion. I mean,
well, no, you and I talked about that, not at council meeting. We talked about the balance,
yeah, I mean,
and risk management.
We've had almost nothing in that account before and survived. So, you know, what makes me comfortable? You know, the more the better. This risk management, which still has to come back to you kind of for guidelines of what it can be used for, but really the risk management is for those situations that isn't covered by CJPIA, you know, land use decisions or personnel issues that aren't covered, intentional acts, and those types of things. Luckily, we haven't had any of those. So whether, you know, does 250 make me comfortable or 500, it just depends. We haven't needed it. I've been able to handle all of those lawsuits and been successful on those lawsuits, but that doesn't mean, you know, we don't have any right now, any claims that are not covered is the best I could answer it. So,
okay, I guess.
I mean, you
right,
could reduce it to $250,000.
Well, and I'd like to see some discussion on that, see if that's realistic or where people want to go. But my whole thing in bringing this forward was in all the exercises that we've done with the emergency centers and the scenarios that we've had, whenever we've talked about an earthquake that would break, say, the aqueduct and prevent us from receiving our allotments, or tsunamis or earthquakes, it's pretty much a consensus that we're going to be on our own for 72 hours. So I think it's the city that's has some money that's going to be able to pay some private providers of things that are going to be the beneficiary of those things that they're going to need in that 72 hours. So I'd like to see $1 million put in a don't touch emergency only fund, the remainder of that being a true accumulation fund, a discussion regarding the $250,000 limit on risk management, and what was the other thing? And I feel that's a realistic goal.
It's interesting because we looked at a lot of the cities to see what kind of reserves they had, and many of them had low reserves. They had 15%. And most of the cities that I talked to that had a low reserve said, we really wish we had more. We're striving to get more. So they really wanted to be in the 20% range. Most of the cities were, you know, interested in at least being at 20.
Yes, Patty. Question for Mr. Grantham. So you're saying of the 2.8 that we have in reserve right now, you'd like to keep one there for real emergency, don't touch, but the other 1.8 you'd be willing to spend on what?
I'd be willing to keep it in the accumulation fund.
And how's that different from emergency?
Well, an accumulation fund, it's our reserves, and so the intent is, yeah, we want to keep our reserves, but if something comes up that we really need that for, then we have the option of looking at it to see if we want to spend some of it. I'm talking about that $1 million that we put away. We don't touch that. And that's for a true emergency. It's not considered reserve fund. It's a different face on it.
Other comments, Carla?
Sure. I guess I'm going to be the bad guy here because I totally disagree. when I looked at these other cities, if you take away the element of the percentage, which we have, and just look at the dollar value, because an emergency is an emergency, whether it happens here or in San Luis or in Monterey, if the levee breaks, it costs us $1 million, just the same as it costs Monterey $1 million or San Luis $1 million. So their 20% in San Luis Obispo is $10 million, or almost $11 million. And so the only city, actually, that regardless of what the percentage is, because I don't care, a disaster is a disaster, it doesn't put a percentage value on it, what it costs us, the only city that's less than us is Soledad, that I looked in here, and that their budget for their years, their general fund budget is $7 million, and their reserve is $1.75 million. So I'm not really in favor of moving the money over there and then now reducing it. You know, the 7.5%, for starters, I'd rather have a dollar amount on it than have to figure it out all the time how much we're going to put for fiscal uncertainty. And looking at all these other cities that Ms. Slayton gave us, half of them don't touch it, half of them do. It's kind of a 50-50 split. But if you take all these and break them out, you'll see, you know, Goleta keeps 33%, which is $5 million. Lemoore keeps $3.8 million. Everybody, as I said before, but one city that's listed here keeps less money than us. And an emergency costs the same no matter what city you're in. So I would be really concerned about lowering down what we're going to keep there for a catastrophic emergency just because it's a percentage.
Noah?
And I'd actually strongly agree with you there, particularly because not only do you have to deal with the response to the immediate emergency, but then long-term, how to build and revitalize the community out of that. And certainly almost a quarter of our operating budget in a large disaster situation wouldn't touch the big challenge of rebuilding the community if we ever come to that. Hopefully we don't, but I think it's our responsibility to be prepared and ready for that. So I would agree with Ms. Borchard that we should keep this fund as high as possible and really focus it on that emergency element of it.
Betty?
I don't have much to add to that. I think in my mind, a reserve has always been for emergencies, whether that's general fund or the other enterprising funds. And so unless it's a really deep need, that we just don't spend it.
Well, I guess what I'd look for is a little bit of a compromise. I agree with keeping as much as we can now that we have, hallelujah, we finally reached this 27.5%. Whatever the reason for it, we finally got there, which is exciting. But I also think that having $2.88 million, it is a lot of money, and there's a fiscal emergency that you have to consider, too. And I don't think we've reached it yet. Certainly it's been difficult. But if indeed the economy continues the way it's going, and if indeed we're going to lose more people or more services, I think at that time maybe you do look at it and say, you know, is it worth it on the hopes that the economy is going to be rebounding at some point to invest a couple $100,000 here and there to keep our budget and our services at a level that we want to have. So I'm agreeing that, yes, we need to keep as much as possible there, but I think we also need to allow ourselves a little bit of whoever they're going to be to do that. But I would hate to see us say, absolutely not, we can never spend a penny of this to balance the budget. Because and I think that's true in the other cities, too. They are all right now dipping into their reserves to continue in this situation. And we've talked about it at the mayor's meetings. Everybody has pretty much gone into reserves to an extent. And it's just a matter of the extent you want to have. But I wouldn't want us to say absolutely never.
Well, on this list here, not all of them have. Half of them have not. Half of them have restrictions not. And I would hope that before we would consider cutting any essential services or positions, we would be cutting non-essential services. So I'd be willing certainly to look at this later on down the road, but I don't think that we're in a position right now that we're faced with a crisis.
No, I agree.
So maybe we
never will be, and I hope we never will be.
But then I guess I'm not really seeing the need to pass this right now because it'll come back to us then, or whomever the council is at a future time when the need arises to be adjusted.
Other comments? Decision?
Well, if we label this an emergency, if we include the word emergency in the name of the fund, that wouldn't preclude us from, in the case of a severe fiscal emergency, mm-hmm. To make that decision. What I was agreeing with Ms. Borchardt on is that we're very clear with our decision tonight going forward that the disaster emergency is the one that we are really
catastrophic
natural disaster, yeah, that we're really concerned about,
right.
And trying to maintain this fund for us the first priority. That would be my intent and hope that we would accomplish tonight.
So, Ms. Peters, if the intent is to only do catastrophic, that doesn't meet the part where you're saying never say never. So would you rather not pass anything tonight and leave it, or would you like us to go with the emergency catastrophic?
I guess what I was thinking is more setting that emergency catastrophic, okay, we're always going to keep that at 26% or something, but that other 1% maybe would be allowable for immediate fiscal emergencies or difficulties, just so that it's not an absolute blanket, no, we can't touch it for anything. And maybe we don't need to do that tonight. Maybe that's just something that as things come up, we make those decisions. That's what we've been doing so far. Of course, I think that's what staff's problem is that's what we've been doing so far.
Well,
obviously staff is fine with whatever the council decides. We just wanted to bring it back to you as you ask. So either way.
Well, you know, one example I can think of is what we're trying to do with this COP grant right now. We're applying for one that gives us a COP for 3 years on the condition that we pay him the fourth year. So when that fourth year rolls around, we're going to have to come up with that money. Otherwise, we're never going to get another COP grant or any kind of other grant. I mean, you have to pay these back and do your part of it. So, you know, and if we don't get more revenue, then we're not going to be able to fulfill our fourth year with that. So that's where that money would come from. That's kind of an emergency if you don't have the ability to fulfill your grant. That's serious business.
Well, it's just a question we have to decide. Do we want to specify it right now? Do we want to leave it to, you know, the individual councils at the time when the emergency comes up and let them weigh what the best use is? We finally achieved the amount that we wanted to have. It's certainly not making us much in interest. That's unbelievable that it makes so little. But at the same time, that is our security, and we don't want to jeopardize that.
Can I just ask, we get the same interest off risk management balance that we do on the accumulation?
Yeah, it's okay. About 1.5%, but if you were to figure that the risk management is $500,000 and it's getting $7,500, and your emergency reserve is, what, five times that, it's going to be making almost $40,000 in interest. So you're applying about 1.5% to the balance that's in there.
I have a question. Does the 1990, and this is Mr. Schultz, does the 1995 resolution supersede the 93, or is the 93 still in effect? Like, are we supposed to, like in number 5, a reserve for emergencies of $800,000 shall be established?
The 95 is not included in your package, so I'd have to look to see the language of that, and I was just looking for it myself. I had the same question of if whether it's in conflict or not and whether it even references it or not. So,
or if they can abide side by side.
They could be side by side. You know, the problem is, and I'm just kind of doing the research now.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you might want to consider, and I didn't want to pick out or make any recommendations on based on what other cities are doing, just to provide you that information, but at the very bottom of the city survey is a town called Waterford, and it's kind of interesting what they've done is they've hit their amount at 33%, but then anything over and above that may be available. That's kind of an interesting aspect. We've never really had that opportunity here because we haven't gotten to our 27.5%, but we may be at the point this year, especially based on what our general fund budget may be, that we may be over the 27.5% just a little bit, and maybe specify something to do with that amount. I think what they say is only used amounts above the 33.3% so far, and they put approximately for them it was $400,000 this year. So that might help you. I don't know.
Well, and then that begs the question, if we get a smaller budget, our reserve technically then would go down, so does that mean more money is available for spending? So maybe the absolute amount is more important than the percentages. I don't know.
Well, I like the idea of keeping the percentage the way it is. We finally reached it. So now if it does generate interest, that maybe anything above that percentage number we would consider using for other items
that
the council agrees are important. How about that as a policy? Would that work?
I'm comfortable with that.
I'm not interested in the percentage. I'd rather have it be a dollar amount. I just, you know, I don't mind if we use the interest.
Oh, right. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Because it's got, as Ms. Wonholt said, when the budget adjusts up or down, then that percentage is always going to adjust up or down. And so your dollar amount for your catastrophic emergencies versus your fiscal uncertainty are going to, mm-hmm. It's going to shift.
How about wording it percentage or a cash amount that we established tonight?
Not to be lower than.
Right. Yeah. How's that?
Sounds good.
Ms. Wynn-Holtz, you made a comment about the $800,000 that was established back in 1995. And I just wanted to let you know that $800,000 was never transferred out of the general fund. It was set up as a reserve fund balance in the general fund. It was not cash-backed. This is cash dollars in its own fund, and a lot of cities don't have theirs cash-backed.
Ah.
They have reservations of general fund.
And I don't understand what you just said about cash back.
Oh, no, that's interesting. It's not
there's
a separate cash.
There's actual money in a fund. There's actually $2.8 million in a fund by itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a reserve portion of our fund balance where we say this fund balance is $3.4 million and $800,000 of it is reserved.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we might only have $100,000 in cash in that fund. This $2.8 million is the fund balance, and it's the cash balance
as
well.
It physically exists.
Yes.
Spendable.
And
or
within
not.
That is the $800,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would like to see $2.75 million as the figure that we never go below. And then anything above that, we can consider to use in an emergency, not just willy-nilly, but really talk about, say, okay, we're willing to take this out of that fund to use. How's that sound?
With hopes of replacing it at a better time.
Yeah,
to
oh,
keep
yeah,
the
absolutely,
percentage.
Absolutely.
So you're saying the dollar amount or the percentage.
Right. Right.
Not to be lower than.
Right. 27, the percentage or 2.75 million.
And why wouldn't you just use the current amount of 2.88?
Just because I want to allow us that area, that wiggle room. And we're not going to use it this year. We don't have to use it this year. We've got a balanced budget. But in future, we might want to. And if we don't allow for any of that, then there may only be, you know, 40,000 or something, which may not be enough. And it's still guaranteeing us a very comfortable cash security. I'll make it a motion. We'll go from there.
So you're talking about allowing, at this point, would be $130,000. Is that right?
I'm less allowing that, as I'm saying that the reserve accumulation
Is that right?
fund shall never be allowed to go below.
No, that's not right.
22,000.
How much?
23.8.
23.8. Sorry. Thank you.
Shall be maintained at 2.75 million or 27.5%, whichever is higher. I think I'll just leave it at that. That's my motion. Do I hear a second? AGP, we're back. There we go. All right. We're back with item D5, which is a discussion regarding development of criteria and measurements of success for the wastewater treatment plant project. Noah, this one's yours.
Thank you. And I guess to kick this off, I'll focus on our backgrounds in our reports. And I brought this item before us after some conversations that we had at the Joint Powers Agreement meeting regarding criteria and overall, not goal setting, but interests for the project. And we've, as the project has gone on and I'm learning more about the process, there has definitely been discussion about a larger list of interests and measurements of success for the outcome of the project and making sure that we have the ability to measure how effectively we've reached the project as far as the highest value project and what it fits into our needs for the community. Some of those places where that has occurred, talking with Mr. Keough, is within the facilities master plan. There's discussions in there. And then as we go forward into the CEQA process, there's elements in there that allow for a dialogue about what are the things that are really important to us to satisfy. At the same time, with criteria and values for a project, it's I think important for us as a council, and then ultimately going forward as a JPA body, to discuss and talk about this list of criteria, which I've just put down here example criteria and interests. We can certainly add to these or detract from these. But something that's clear from us that is able to give us a measurement as we go forward, to give staff clarity about what it is that the board and the council really find important for us to satisfy. And I think overall this helps align us as we go forward, and then looking back it gives us an evaluation tool about how successful and effective we've been. I wanted to have this discussion here tonight, give us a chance to just really talk about these interests and things that are important for us with the project, consider perhaps this list with additions, and then potentially bringing it forward to the JPA, letting the Cayucas side talk about it amongst themselves, and then hopefully as a JPA as a whole, we could say these are the things that are important to us, and that would provide guidance as we go forward with unforeseen changes or challenges that that would be benefited by a clear hierarchy of values and interests for the project. So I think I'd just like to turn it over to you. You've probably had time to review the report and look at this list that we have on the screen above for the public at home, and discuss perhaps going forward with this and where you'd like to go with it.
I can't see what's on the screen. Is that the same thing?
Same thing as what you have here.
Just a brief going over. It seems to me the last three, the design and the floodplain, earthquake, et cetera, design and site for the build-out of both communities, the design and process of the Coastal Commission, just to kind of eliminate some things or to narrow. For me, the bottom one is a matter of timing of when either staff or we decide, we being the board, that we need to talk to Coastal Commission. I mean, that has to happen regardless, and so that might become a timing issue. So maybe are we looking at timing there rather than not if but when? Is that what that's really about?
That was basically the three of those. I think those are interests that I have. I've heard from different members of the community, from reviewing other wastewater treatment plant projects in other communities, that those are things that should be acknowledged mm-hmm. on a list like this to make sure that we don't lose track of those important details and that we've noticed them. And that's what I think this list is the intent of this list is to do, mm-hmm. is to say, you know, these are important things for us as staff goes forward, as consultants go forward working on this project, that there's something to refer back to, and they understand, hey, this is an important component and we shouldn't forget about it, or maybe we didn't realize that was as important to the board as we thought, and so we should definitely include that. So, you know, at some point, this is just a general list. At some point, there would probably need to be a discussion about priorities within this list. Mm-hmm. I don't think we need to get into that tonight, but I wanted to kind of introduce this and really hear from the rest of you worked into the project in some way or another. What I did want it to be was fairly inclusive, though, mm-hmm. of the things that we have, mm-hmm. of what we value in the project, and yeah. Not to say, well, this is going to automatically be part of the process, so we should just drop it from the list. Mm-hmm. Seems like you really kind of want that all those elements to be there, so yeah. it's you don't look at it later on down the road or in the future when you get to evaluation of the project and the success of the project to say, you know, well, those things weren't included, and therefore we're not going to even evaluate whether we were able to accomplish that or not. Mm. So I would actually like to keep that in there. I think we're going to address those issues. They're already built into it, like you point out, but looking back, it would be important to say, okay, yeah, we did a good job in this item, and to have it there gives us that chance to do that.
I guess I'm coming at it a little differently. I want to pick it apart and go after the things we really want to look at, and you're saying, no, this is one in everything that needs to be included.
Yeah.
So we're coming in different directions. Okay.
Yeah. Well, and that's where my confusion comes in, and I know you've given a lot of thought and obviously effort to this, But I'm looking at this list, and I'm thinking as we've gone through this project from the get-go, all of these things have been part of the consideration. So I'm not sure what... I mean, okay, just say, okay, our priority is neighborhood friendly, and so that's going to add another $600,000 or $700,000 or $1 million if we want to achieve some of these things. And does that then become something that's important to us, or is affordability cost more important to us? I mean, it seems to me that these are things that you look at as you go along, and we have been looking at as we go along, and we've made decisions as we've gone along. So I'm not sure if you can really prioritize all of these things now where we are in the process.
And I would agree with you. And I don't expect us to start prioritizing these now. But to get that laundry list of items that are important or have some importance is valuable, because it becomes the guide on a larger level. It's not very specific, but it becomes the guide to start to prioritize it as we go forward. And I expect that we will need to prioritize it, and yes, balance those decisions and get into it more as to how much do we actually invest into neighborhood friendliness and still keep it an affordable project. Those are bigger discussions, more focused, specific discussions that I would expect we'd have. But to start off, as you do any project that with as much importance as this one has for the community, you should, as I've seen in practice for project planning and goal setting and so on, you start out with that list, the orientation list. What are we trying to accomplish? What are the important things for us to make sure we're successful in addressing? So as you go through the process, you can maintain and stay true to it. And I guess where this came from me to a certain degree was as a new board member or a council member for Morro Bay, and same with Ms. Borchard, we came into the process late or at the point where we did. And this list, I think, could help as we go into this next council. This would be almost the orientation of, okay, these are the established priorities or at least interest values for the project that we're working off of. And for me as a new council member, it would have been very helpful to come in and know that that's been established. And yeah, the process is working its way there. Maybe I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but at the same time, what I've seen in practice with large projects is the sooner you do something like this and get consensus from the decision makers on what is important, what are the values, the better off you're going to be and the more clear you're going to be able to address those issues.
Your discussion is reminding me of a discussion we had at the RAC when we were choosing projects for the earworm, and we had to establish criteria, and I think it was a 1-5 scale. And it's very similar to this, because you have to choose projects from across the county. They're all extremely important to their particular community. But then how do you decide what's going to rise to the top? And so these are just the criteria. So what I'm hearing you say is that these are your criteria, all possible criteria that we may want to look at, that others have said this is what you look at. And so you're saying, how do we balance these? And therefore, it's like giving... To some extent, we've done a little bit of this, but we've never called it out, maybe, from the plan that we've adopted. Is that what you're...
Yeah, you can't go into... This is a...
As we get
one
to the
list,
design phase.
It's like you can go to it and say, these are the things that we're trying to accomplish with the project, or at least recognize valuable for the project, for the people that would be involved with making decisions as we go forward, whether it's us or future council consultants, whomever.
It might be interesting to go back and compare this with the plan that we adopted and see if there's any discussion in there that relates. Have you done that to any of these items?
I haven't. I did talk with Mr. Keough, our manager of the plants, and he said that this is alluded to in the project, that there's components of this within the facilities master plan, but there, as far as I can tell, there isn't a clear list where it's just like
out.
Very kind of It's somewhat general, but also is specific in those general needs and interests.
Yeah. As I recall, there are more assumptions and understood, of course, this is what we want, but we never really say this, this, and this.
Yeah, and I think as we go forward, it's not the easiest thing to get a board like the RJPA to come to agreement on this interest list and then come to agreement on the priorities there. That's challenging. I, as part of the CEQA review, it sounds like we'll be starting to do that. We have authorization now to hire a project manager. I'm sure the project manager is going to want to be clear or clearly understand from the board what it is that we, our main measurements of success are, what are our criteria of success. This is something that I would expect the project manager to be one of the first things they're going to want to know from us, so they can work and orientate their effort towards achieving those goals.
Well, okay, and looking at this list, I mean, it looks like all things that we've been considering all along the line. I don't really see anything new or different. So certainly it's something that we could all say, yeah, we want all these things. I don't understand where you're going with this. I mean, is this something that you want staff to be checking these off, or I don't get the process.
Yeah, if I could, something that stood out to me was I don't know that we've ever talked about neighborhood friendliness, and that's something that's going to happen to Morro Bay, and I don't think that's going to be a priority for Cayucas, whether it has smell, whether it has lots of lights or not lights, whether whatever comes into that equation. We're going to be concerned about that because of our high school, because of our RV park, because of our businesses around there, our tourism. But that's something that maybe is real important to us and that Cayucas could care less about. So how do we juggle that? Do we just let it go?
I don't think that we haven't been addressing that. I mean, we've talked about, you know, when we had to do the move because of the floodplain and where what's going to be impacted around it, and the fact that there really aren't homes around it, so that's not an issue per se. The visitor area, we talked about perhaps moving that to another area. All I'm saying is it seems to me that we are addressing these things in the process already, and I guess I'm not understanding what I'm fine, the list, I don't think anybody, you know, maybe some people would have an objection to some of it on it. I don't see anything objectionable. I just don't know how you want this implemented. I mean, is this something that you want someone, the project manager or something, to check off each of these things, make sure we've done them? Is that really a good use of his time, his or her time? I don't know what you want to do here. I really am confused. Rob.
Well, unfortunately or fortunately, this is your first EIR that the city of Morro Bay is going to do in over 20 years. Cloisters was the last one. So I don't believe the council understands the depth of an EIR and how big that document will be and how it'll go into all the issues. It'll go into whether Cayucas wants to or not. It'll go into odor control. It will go into neighborhood compatibility. It will go into traffic. It will go into every single one of those issues and have to deal with it and come up whether there's any mitigated measures. That's not to say this isn't wrong, you know, and it isn't good to have this document and even expand on it. I'm just saying some of these issues, like you said, you've touched on them. They've been in, some of them are in the facilities master plan. I think all of these things will begin to be fleshed out in the next 6 months when you begin to see 30% of the design and you can say this isn't neighborhood compatible, and we go back and look at a new design. You know, or where is the odor control on this, or where is all these issues? So I think those really do get fleshed out in the next 6 months, quite a bit during the EIR process to find that all out. And that's when you start to get interaction with the Coastal Commission on some of these issues, on what they think of it also, on the aesthetics of it. They're concerned with the aesthetics. They're concerned with the actual capacity of it was their issue. And you know, and so those issues really, I think you're really going to see the EIR and go, wow, I haven't submission. And since they have that authority, they, for example, you decide you want to just put, you know, 2 20-gallon plants outside the boundaries and say that's it. I'm happy with the neighborhood compatibility. the Coastal Commission could come back and say, no, we want, you know, X, Y, and Z to make it neighborhood compatible, and we'd have to live with that permit conditions just like anyone else does that's an applicant for a project. So they'll have final say to change any of the mitigations to add to them or subtract to them. Usually they add mitigations, they don't subtract from them.
It almost sounds like why even do it?
Wait and do what?
If they're going to do all the work.
Yeah. We're the jurisdiction with the initial permit jurisdiction. Why does any developer, why does any of them come to us first? Why don't they just go directly to Coastal Commission? Because we have the certified LCP.
Mm-hmm.
We're two. We're an applicant. You remember we wear two hats. But we're also the granting authority. So we are wearing two hats, and the applicants all have to go through the same process of developing an EIR, coming up with mitigation measures. One of the things as an applicant, you will take into cost considerations for some of it and wonder if that's worth the money, whereas you're going to have another eyes to look at it. Coastal Commission might not have that same concern on what the cost implications are. So that's, you know, one of the things you'll take into consideration. So, you know, you'll be going through quite a bit of this in the next 6 months as it starts to ramp up with the design in the EIR. That doesn't mean it's not a good list, and you might want to look at other items on it. I'm just trying to give you some insight of where we'll be going, and it's going to get intensive.
So maybe this would be like almost doing the ideal thing, say this is where we would like to be, and then see how that matches up with the EIR, and then say whether we feel like that.
Yeah, and to start to actually to adopt a list, a general list, and then start to prioritize that as we get more information and realistic numbers, and I think overall this would help that decision making process. I don't expect any of us on this list to have to say, well, that shouldn't be there. That all of these things have some value. It's going to come down to whether we can afford it or whether it's feasible. And so by adopting a list like this, I don't think we're saying, well, these are all the things that we're going to have as part of the project, period. No, it's more of a guide for us as we go forward. These are values that we have, and if we can achieve them affordably, then we're going to do that, and if not, we're going to have to make those tough decisions and focus our resources where it's going to be affordable and effective. So overall, though, I think having a list that we can work off of will be helpful not only for us, but as I said, for future council members that come on board and are kind of trying to step into a process that's moving pretty quickly. This might help them say, okay, they've put some thought in aligning this project towards these things that most everyone's going to agree with, and I can be assured that that's there's been that consideration put into it in the front end, and we've got that guide to fall back to if we have to make a tough decision.
And maybe in a sense not abdicating that, you know, to the professional EIR writer or to the Coastal Commission, but saying, yeah, as a council representing our community, this is what we think. I mean, it's almost like taking some initiative and reminding ourselves what's important. I mean, it's almost like that for me.
I almost kind of look at this as a feel-good type exercise where you can go into the JPA meeting maybe ultimately and everyone can look at this interest list, which isn't binding, and say, yeah, and come out of it with somewhat of a unanimous decision that these are things that have some level of importance to us. Of course, then we have to get into prioritization, which will have some differences there. But overall, it would be good for us to be able to look at a list of interests and be agreeable. It looks like Mr. Grantham has something to say.
I always look like that. I just want to, you know, remind everybody that we are in a partnership. And we're running a partnership with Cayucas on this sewer. And you were right when you said a lot of these things have been looked at. And I do want to, you know, first of all, thank you for your work and your time on this. There's valid stuff here. But, you know, I think back to the way our relationship used to be and how tough it was to get anything done and how far we've come. And when this new plant goes into effect, hopefully prior to that, we'll have a new JPA agreement in effect, which is going to be, I think, just as convoluted as our EIR process. And I agree that a lot of those things will be addressed here. And I also was thinking, you know, what Betty said, that it's true. We have certain things on here that apply to us that we want that Cayucas could probably care less about. But that's all going to be part of a new JPA agreement. And I think this is a good model to take to them.
Application of it in some way, I'm not sure about that. I think that's something that's going to come through the process, as Rob says, with the EIR and all of that. But I think, yeah, this is a really good outline of what is involved, and certainly something that would allow newcomers to say, oh, yeah, all of these things are part of this. It's not just a building. Yeah, yeah. So to that extent, I like the idea.
I promised Ms. Luker that we'd try to come out of this item with some clarity.
How unique.
Yeah, so I guess as far as a motion, what would be helpful there and give you the latitude with this to use it to the most advantage possible?
Rob's reaching for the microphone. Shall we let him speak?
There's a couple things you mentioned that I'd like to see happen. That I think it is, you know, we forget when you're involved in the process for 4 or 5 years or even longer that you're involved in it. You know all these dates, and when new council members do come in, they don't know that on such and such date the facilities master plan was discussed at this, and it was adopted in a draft form, then it was brought back with changes. And so one of the things I just leaned over is you know, we are going to have new council members in November, and this process won't be over, and that we need to start develop a timeline now that we can just continually add to show what we are doing. And also, based on the comments of transparency, to make sure that that's available to show where people can find dates on everything that's been looked at. So that's one thing I'd like to see us do. And then as far as this report, though, maybe this is something that goes to the technical subcommittee to take a look at and see where it can be developed. It was kind of tough tonight because two of the major players that really could contribute to this, Dylan and Rob, aren't here. And so maybe at the technical level, then Cayucas could look at it and see whether how they want to look at this. It's just a checklist with a box so that when we're going through the design phase, the project manager has it and can check it off to make sure that all these were important. I mean, like you said, I mean, I don't think there's anything on here that to me says, oh, we're not even going to look at that. They're either alternatives or there's stuff that's going to be dealt with. And again, though, Cayucas may have very different feelings as to how much do you want to spend on, say, odor control, because it isn't as big a deal to the community. And that might be a sticking point later on that might be even from a cost allocation standpoint that we have to look at. But, you know, maybe that's where it needs to go instead of at a JPA meeting is go to there and see how they want to develop this into more criteria. Because I think Dylan is supportive of this idea, but I don't have the experience to flush out what form it would take and what type of matrix or what type of checkbox so that you've got that list. But I think you're also hearing, though, that we need to be more a little bit more aggressive of the past of what we've done to make sure that that's out there and we know how far we've come. Because it what I hear is we just willy-nilly have just made decisions, and, you know, I think it's important to know where we've spent our money and how we've done it and what decisions have been made.
I would agree half with you, and that is that I think the historical record's good because of the future. I'm not sure I agree about going to the technical committee, just in that I see this more as a value judgment than a technical exercise, more about the values of the communities and what's important to them. And so I guess I'd rather see it at the whole meeting than at the subcommittee.
I would assume that the Cayucas board would want to have the opportunity also to discuss it amongst themselves like we have tonight.
Right.
And, you know, make adjustments. Like, I still would want to hear if there's things on we don't have on this list that anyone feels is important to include or, you know, actually pull off. And then I think keeping some latitude because, yeah, there's different ways to start to make that matrix or prioritize the different components here. And I wouldn't want to make a motion that locks us in too rigidly to that interaction and keep it open, especially as we move forward with the project manager and so on. So this list is there and available to be utilized and focused further on as needed. It would be my intent.
I guess that's where my concern or confusion still lies. I mean, I can see adopting this as an outline or a roadmap of the entire process, which has already gone several years, and saying, you know, these are all the values that we value. You know, these are the things that we value in that process. When you talk about prioritizing and implementing, then I get a little concerned as to what that means.
And I would support that and agree with you and have it accompanying the schedule we already have, the compliance schedule.
That,
so it would kind of make a package of it.
Nice.
Because we have the compliance.
The Morro Bay City Council adopt this as a list of interests and values for the wastewater treatment plant upgrade project. Pair it with our compliance schedule to be available for future representatives, staff, consultants, and other decision makers.
That's it.
And I was going to say, and forward it to the Cayucas board for their
I was trying to make it a clear motion instead of going on and on the way we tend to do.
Are you comfortable with that, Les?
Yes, I'll second that, including the sending it on to Cayucas. And more discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? None.
Thank you.
Okay. All right. Item D1. This is the allocation of funds from the fundraiser Follies. And I gave you all a corrected last page on this. Did you all have that? And Betty found one error in that last page, which is the very bottom. The discretionary funds reserve is going to 2011, not 2012. I don't know how I did that. This was my item. And basically, it's just a report, which I do to the council each year, because even though this is a separate fund in the general fund, it's something that the council has supported and adopted and all to do. We've continued to raise more money each year, which is encouraging. The first year, we earned $2,720. The second, $3,278. And this year, $5,238, which sounds wonderful. And everybody, I'm sure, of the events is thinking, we, a lot of money, but our costs tripled this year because we had to address some of the things that we aren't going to have available and didn't this year. Moving tables over from Brannigan's, instead we rented them, so that was a cost that we had to absorb. And also we are paying full reimbursement to the city for their labor and assistance, which previous to now they've given us a little bit of a break on. And that's not right. They should, you know, be fully reimbursed for their time and labor. So it's not going to come out to more this year. The allocations are pretty much the same. We have a couple of new events. And also two events now are supported by the city, the Winterbird Festival and the Dahlia Days. So for those, because their permit fees and use fees are covered already, we decided on just a flat $100 benefit to them because both of those events have contributed people and services to the Follies. So we didn't want them to go totally unrecognized. But they can't get more than that flat amount. So that's where it is. We'll be distributing $2,670 this year. And I am putting the balance of my discretionary funds towards the 2011 show, since I won't be here next year. We're also looking at another way to where to house the Follies, the supporting group. With my not being here and not having the access to the city buildings, which we as council members have, the suggestion was to team with the seniors who would have that same ability. And I've talked to Pauline Stansbury. We're meeting tomorrow to discuss that option. And it's something that the seniors may embrace as something that they can do to further the community. They've been supportive from the beginning. They've been involved quite a bit in the Follies. So we're going to see if that would work out as a way to keep it going. And that concludes my report.
I have a couple of questions.
Okay.
How is it that you advertise so groups know to apply? Or is it just the certain list that the chamber keeps or that you keep? Or like the photo expo's in here now.
Right.
But then that's probably because the Johnsons know about the list.
And well, actually, they fill out, excuse me, there's an application that when the event goes in to pull their permit, mm-hmm. they fill out an application for Follies funding.
So it's attached to that,
yes.
so everyone knows about it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Didn't know that. And then, again, because...
And to add to that, there's also a requirement now. When we made that application, we said that they have to do something to contribute to the Follies mm-hmm. to be able to collect their allocation.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, whether they're selling tickets or distributing posters or something that, you know, not to cost them money, but to get some volunteer support for the event.
Now, this is not an official city committee?
No.
And so the way you divvy up the money is just however you decide or the board that works with you
right.
decides?
Right. We have our board of the Follies.
And so once you're no longer
yeah.
the mayor, how is that going to work?
It'd still be the board.
But it's not, is it still going to, I guess I'm wondering how it fits into the structure of the city. How's it going to work?
And it's important
to
remember.
I think it's more for transparency is why you
right,
bring it forward.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we don't impact the general fund at all.
Right.
They're entirely
right,
separate.
Right.
So.
Right. And so it's not part of the city government. It's just something that happens. And
it would be like,
brings money for those people or those organizations that want to help pay for the fees.
It would be kind of like the music festival or the Harbor Festival bringing a report to this detail to you, telling you how they spend all their money. We don't
so
have
them. Completely detached.
Yeah, they really are detached, but they're bringing it forward just because they do sponsor other events.
Well, and because I got the council's permission to do it in the first place, you know. And at first the city was helping us out, so now we're beyond that.
Okay.
We're at the point of entirely mm-hmm. reimbursing the city for anything. So,
and there's the push for getting a separate nonprofit to take over. So, for instance, if the Senior Citizens Incorporated take over, they're completely separate from the city with their own board of directors.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a great
move. Yeah. Another, okay.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the report, and I want to thank everybody up here who was involved in that very much, because it really shows the success.
Yeah, thanks for your willingness to continue the program.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm not going away. Okay, future agenda items. Anybody?
Yeah, I think so. The request was made by a gentleman that we have a once-a-month report on what's going on at the JPA.
Right.
And I think that's probably similar to, you know, what's going on with the ARRA. Just see if that happens, mm-hmm. like the first meeting of the month.
Well, I was thinking that we should have the report after immediately, whatever meeting is immediately after the JPA
okay.
meeting.
So you were going to agendize that anyways? And
yeah, I like that idea, too. Okay. I've got it written down. But that's fine. Anybody else agree with that? I like that idea. Yeah, okay.
And
so we'll do that. I don't know if you need a staff report on that. Or is just something that we discuss?
It could be a mayor report?
It can be part of...
If council wants us to, we'll just start doing it at the second meeting
yeah.
of each council meeting. If there's a consensus without bringing it back as a future agenda item.
Yeah, that sounds good.
We'll probably incorporate it maybe when he does his water report. Does he do that the second meeting? That might
oh,
be
yeah,
the way to do it.
Well, it should be following the JPA meeting.
Okay.
So it can be
we'll
a report on
it.
What was
We'll just start reporting on a monthly basis at
yeah.
a council meeting.
And it can be at the beginning when we do our staff
report. And you're looking for a written report versus a verbal report?
I think it can be verbal.
It can be verbal.
Yeah,
report.
I think that's better. That way the public gets the message. Okay, so we don't need to worry about that. Okay.
And then the Parks and Rec bylaws were brought up about whether or not to put in a youth position or not, and how you would describe that youth position. Is that something we want to talk about
for
the Parks and Rec Commission for that seventh seat?
We talked about that before. What happened?
Yeah. It's just very difficult. Unfortunately, teenagers
yeah.
aren't always, you know, but
yeah.
you know, we could try a liaison if you want to, but I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm just raising it because it was raised, and so I'm not saying one way or the other.
I think more importantly is I think the question was raised. Our bylaws say you have to be a registered voter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And how can you be
if you're a student?
If you're a student. So if we wanted to go to Reckon Park just to look at the issue, their commission to say what they could change in their bylaws that would allow that to occur if there is somebody and they're not automatically excluded, we could do that as opposed to setting up that seventh position, I think we've been there and we've had a tough time finding that to fill.
If we look at that, I'd also suggest we look at the number on the Recreation and Parks Commission. We had no applicants for the open position this time, so I know we've gone back and forth with that. Currently, that commission is at 7. If we open it up to perhaps Los Osos, maybe we could get 7, but at this point, it's been very difficult to get that board to 7.
Well, but this most recent person, I think, wanted to be on the board but resigned for personal medical things. And so I don't think it's impossible to get there.
But nobody responded to the ad. We've been advertising it. That was a concern.
That I think out of all the commissions, that one's had the hardest time keeping 7.
Mm. I don't know if it's something really future agenda item, but it would be nice in the future if we're in that position where we have no response to an ad to fill vacant positions, that the council would be notified maybe a week before the filing period closes. So we each know people in the community that might we could reach out to and maybe get them to come out and apply. That would be something that would be nice. I don't know how that fits in the future agenda items, but
no, we can just ask that.
And then my last item was something.
Let's go not so much that one, but the previous one. Do you want the bylaws to go to the Reckon Park Commission for review at this time?
Well, if it's a matter of perhaps having more people, if we...
Something that's coming up on Wednesday?
Was that with the Regional Water Quality Control Board?
I don't know. Was that what that was?
Yeah. I didn't bring it up. I forgot to. The meeting's Thursday. Or Wednesday.
Meeting's Wednesday, 10:30 to 5 at the Elks Club in San Luis Obispo, which is by the drive-in. Yeah, behind the cemetery. I'm not completely up to speed on that ag order. I've just recently found out it's online to look at. It's certainly something that I think in general we can support, so I'll talk to staff tomorrow, see if there isn't someone that can't go. It certainly seems like it's tightening up the rules on ag pollution, dealing with nitrates and other issues. So,
this is the discussion we had at the RAC. That was the So that's the same item.
That's the workshop. That's on Wednesday.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't get previous notice, but that doesn't mean Dylan or one of the other associate engineers isn't on top of the issue over there and been looking at the comments. So I'm going to follow up. I just found out today about it because I was gone last week at the league conference. But it's certainly from what I saw, there's nothing in there. Any rules are better than what they have right now dealing with ag pollution. So anything's going to go in the right direction.
Yeah, I didn't think that we were ready to take a stand on that, but that we would be just keep abreast of it because it's just in the preliminary stages.
It's a workshop. They're proposing them and they're not finalized yet, but they're certainly in that first stage of adopting policy that will require the ag users to use other methods and plans and stuff that we've been trying to get from some of the ag users. So, and the Farm Bureau is opposed to some of those requirements when I saw online tonight.
So, Mr. Schultz, as far as our conversation earlier, will you follow up with us then tomorrow
after you get
some feedback from Water Division staff?
Yes.
All right. Rick, anything? Noah? Carla? All right, just a question that came up. How can you give us a brief report on the league conference? Was there anything exciting that went on?
At any of those conferences, after being in the saddle for so many years, I don't know how much more I learned new, but I do learn stuff that we are doing correctly. And one of them was political signs. He said 98% of the cities are out of ordinance because they have timelines or they have size requirements. So it's good to see that when we did ours 4 or 5 years ago, we are in compliance with federal and state law on political signs. A large discussion on medical marijuana dispensaries. and both sides of that issue on whether you're allowed or not to allow, and strong feelings on the side that you're not allowed to do it at all because of the federal regulations. And there's a big issue on that will be coming forward to you on the fact that there's a state initiative that would allow to legalize medical marijuana that goes past just the medical marijuana. It legalizes it even without a medical necessity. And then we also now have received the initiative from our local citizens with enough signatures, although they haven't been verified, but they have collected past the requirement of signatures necessary to place on our local election a complete ban on medical marijuana dispensaries.
I thought I heard that they didn't get enough signatures on the state one to legalize.
Oh, no. That, yeah. There's,
oh, okay.
There's, yeah. So, and a myriad of other topics that I can, I'll shoot you some updates. I'm going to put some stuff in your boxes on them. But.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
It's in our Western.
Oh, and just one other one for coastal cities. I don't feel so bad about our local coastal plan. Was it Carlsbad or not Carlsbad, but next to Carlsbad down south? They've been waiting for their LCP for 12 years. So we talked in general about the need to try to get a LCP that's a boilerplate that Coastal Commission that would agree to, that would at least be the template that we could start from as coastal cities. But quite a few interesting comments came out, and even from Malibu, who coastal staff, although they don't have enough staff and can't get to the other items, they actually get comments from coastal staff on every single planning commission agenda item that goes in front of their planning commission from the Coastal Commission staff each and every time.
How long does that take? Because they don't have an LCP.
No, they do.
Oh, they do?
Yeah.
How long does that take?
They just comment on every single project that goes in front of them. So, yeah. No, they wrote their LCP form. That's the one that went to court. So Malibu's screened very highly, and then other ones can't get any help at all. So it was interesting. But we've come up with